Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, welcome to what I hope will be a normal, as close as this program can ever get to being normal, week of broadcasting. Hope. I've looked at the schedule. I don't think I'm out of here for anything this week, so cross your fingers. I just spent the last, about an hour of my life trying to figure out why one machine didn't have hardwired internet going into it, and one machine didn't have wireless internet going into it. Solved problem one. Didn't solve problem two. So that remains, that's a yet-to-be-determined sort of thing. Sorry to hear from you. I'm getting a note saying the main website is down. That email rolling in at 5:55 p.m. Eastern Time. Let me look. Yep, sure enough. Wow. So you know you can always get into the chat room just by going to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Several of us are already there. And I'm sure John will be on it like a John and Sue and everybody else on it like a duck on a June bug here presently. We'll talk about my trip here in a little bit. But before we do that, I guess it goes without saying you've all read the news by now. You all know what happened in Pittsburgh. You know what happened in Binghamton, New York. I suppose we're paying a little more attention to the Pittsburgh one because it seems to have a deeper and broader base of meaning, if you will, insofar as we are dealing with a legitimate, real, live, honest-to-God, right-wing nut job who literally lured three police officers to his home so he could murder them. Why? Well, again, you already know. He said he was disturbed about the Obama gun ban. I can't begin to tell you how insane this makes me. On the one hand, you've got the right-wing the gun nuts out there. And these are nuts, okay? I'm not talking about gun ownership. I'm talking about these hardcore weirdos who use guns as some sort of sexual surrogate, who fantasize and then actualize things like the murder of police officers. No, the police aren't perfect, but you know what? They don't deserve to get shot in the face for showing up to a domestic violence call either, now do they? There are plenty of police problems in this country, but this only makes the police problems we have worse. The Obama gun ban. Sweet suffering Jesus. You know, it's the Obama this and the Obama that. I'm informed that this little, and I can only talk about the little local area in which I live, this, but I have a feeling it's not exactly atypical. West Virginia is all abuzz, even in Democratic Party circles, of Obama's going to ram Cap'n Trade down our throats. And I've already told you the story of the convenience store clerk who told me about the Obama energy tax. We've already covered the straight-up, dead-out lies that are being promulgated by the Southern Baptist cult, convention, and their president, Dick Land, claiming that Senator Obama will bankrupt working American families with his carbon tax. We know, for instance, that it's gotten so bad that the authors of the study that the right wing are depending on, the usual suspects, round up the usual suspects. Yeah, so some MIT scientists put together a report that said there would likely be an increase in power bills if we instituted cap and trade and a carbon tax. The right wing ran out and said, it's going to cost every family in America at least $3,100. How you want my Kirk Douglas here? $3,100. Kirk Douglas. You can tell how old I am. There was only one problem, and they ran with it. Oh, they went wild with it. $3,100. America will be destroyed. Just like when we talk about raising the minimum wage. Well, we're thinking about raising the minimum wage from $3.35 to $3.36. Apocalypse! America's business community will be ruined. You know how they are. But anyway, as far as the MIT study is concerned, it got so bad with these lying right-wing horses' rear ends that the authors of the study had to come out and say, guys, stop citing our study. Don't cite our study if you can't cite our study honestly and correctly. That's like, in essence, saying stop being Republicans. Stop being conservatives. Because there's a problem with that $3,100 figure. It doesn't exist. It's not there. I mean, really. The MIT study, you know what it says the average power bill will rise by? $31. Not $310, not $3,100. $31. But then again, when did the facts ever get in the way of the right wing? But it's getting scary out there. A number of people noted it over the weekend. Our good friends David in South Carolina and Maura both sent along the New York Times op-ed piece by Charles Blow called Pitchforks and Pistols. He says, lately I've been consuming as much conservative media as possible, interspersed with shots of Pepto-Bismol. Well, brother, you need the good stuff if you're going to watch this as long as I've been. To get a better sense of the mind and mood of the right, my read, they're apocalyptic. Charles, they are, but there's another word that sounds very similar that is equally applicable. They are apoplectic. They are apocalyptic and apoplectic. Only trained radio professionals can say that, apocalyptic and apoplectic. Apoplectic and apocalyptic. Apocalyptic and apoplectic. They're both, really. And, Charles Blow notes something that has probably existed in all of us. At first, it was entertaining, just harmless, hot-headed expostulation. That sounds so dirty. Of course, there were the garbled facts, twisted logic, and veiled hate speech, but then again, that's just another day in wingnut world. The last part I said he didn't. But what did I expect? Fair and balanced? It was like walking through an ideological house of mirrors. The distortions can be mildly amusing at first, but if I stay too long, it makes me sick. But looky, the light has gone on at the old gray lady. But it's not just all harmless talk, Charles Blow says. For some, their disaffection has hardened into something more dark and dangerous. They're talking about a revolution. Yeah, they are. This phony AstroTurf thing, this Tea Party business, apparently there's going to be one of those in West Virginia in Beckley soon. It makes me want to get my old Get a Brain Moran sign out and my St. Louis Cardinals t-shirt and my do-rag and just stand there, Get a Brain Moran, Get a Life Morans. Get a Brain Morans. Yeah, Charles Blow understands now. He says, for example, Chuck Norris, the preeminent black belt and perspective red shirt, wrote earlier this month on the conservative blog World Nut Daily, net, sorry, how much more will Americans take? When will enough be enough? And when that time comes, will our leaders finally listen, or will history need to record a second American Revolution? And, of course, he cites, as we did, you know, if you listen to this program, you're ahead of the curve. He cites, as I had a few nights earlier, crazier than a sprayed roach, Michelle Bachmann up in Minnesota, telling the Minnesotans that she wants them armed and dangerous. Charles Blow says, ready to bust caps over cap and trade, I presume. Charles Blow notes, Glenn Beck, and then, of course, Pittsburgh. And, of course, there's more to Pittsburgh than meets the eye. In Pittsburgh, you know what happened. Richard Andrew Poplawski, blew away three police officers. As John Cash might have noted, just to watch them die. Then he kept the rest of the officers pinned down long enough that he could make sure they all bled to death if they weren't already dead on the pavement. On his MySpace page 3 years ago, Richard Poplawski wrote, "Crazy to me is going through the motions. Crazy to me is letting each day slip past you. Crazy is being insignificant. Crazy is being obscure. Pointless." Edward Perkovich was Poplawski's longtime friend, lifelong best friend, as it's noted in the story from the Pittsburgh Post. He said he was really into politics and really into the First and Second Amendment. One thing he feared was he feared the gun ban because he thought that was going to take away people's right to defend themselves. He never spoke of going out to murder or kill. You don't have to. Murder is in the right wing's eyes. Blood, the tangy ferris sting. That taste, unique among tastes, is in the backs of their mouths. You know, when you see the story of the Pittsburgh shooting, you start thinking, well, you know, this is a Glenn Beck guy. This is a Limbaugh guy. This is a Hannity guy. And, you know, Glenn Beck did have Wayne LaPierre. We talked about that a little bit. Wayne LaPierre on the program, his program. And they talked about the Obama gun ban. You know, the one that doesn't exist. The one that they've made up in their own teeny, tiny, microscopic little minds. The usual suspects. But add one more to the list. Add one more name to the list of paranoid freaks out there trying to make a living off the fears of the equally paranoid and doubly ignorant. Add the name of Alex Jones. for Richard Poplawski was a big Alex Jones fan. Now, that may come as disturbing to some of you because I know some of you are into Alex Jones. But I don't have any problem saying at all that I've seen him for what he is for a long, long time. His roots are in the militia movement. And his political leanings and his political arguments fit into what they run contrary to whoever is in power, so that he can always keep his base whipped into a credulous frenzy. Glenn Beck has ownership of what happened in Pittsburgh. Rush Limbaugh has ownership of what happened in Pittsburgh. Bill O'Reilly has ownership of what happened in Pittsburgh. Lord knows Bernard Goldberg has ownership of what happened in Pittsburgh. Hannity has ownership of what happened in Pittsburgh. Laura Ingraham, from whom I have heard more than I care to hear for the rest of my natural-born days, but sadly will not probably hear the end of, has ownership of what happened in Pittsburgh. Referring to President Barack Obama, who is probably a good 90 to 100 IQ points above the recently departed dim leader, referring to him as an idiot, making fun of Obama and saying, well, he wants to apologize for America for being great. I had 3 hours of this, actually more, because once I got a little further out of D.C., they reran her. I guess there's a new right-wing hate station in D.C., the new AM 570, Freedom 570, or some such as that. Our work has only begun. Yeah, no, really. I'm sure some of my D.C. area listeners will confirm to me that they're out there. Not one liberal progressive talk station in all of D.C. Not even a flickering candle flame. But they've got a new right-wing hate machine. Laura Ingraham is part of. So too, I think, is Mark Levin. Not our Mark Levine, but Mark Levin. Again, the usual suspects. And I tell you here and I tell you now, and should someone wish to ask me questions, I think I'm making myself abundantly clear. The aim, in fact, the goal of these right-wingers is to keep this frenzy whipped up. To whip up every right-wing weirdo with a house full of guns, And radicalize them to the point of being willing to pull the trigger, to the point of being willing to kill. You know, I never bore any violent fantasies about George W. Bush. I just wanted him to go away. At the very most. I wanted him prosecuted. I still want him prosecuted. I want him prosecuted the way I expect that Godzilla from Wasilla, Sarah Palin, the way that I expect her sister-in-law will be prosecuted, you know, for burglary. Criminals get prosecuted, at least in a nation that prides itself on being a nation of laws and not of men and women. That's what you do with criminals. You indict them. You prosecute them. You let a jury hear their story. Then the jury gives you its verdict. And if they're not guilty, well, okay, justice was served. If they're guilty, well, justice was served. But I didn't, you know, I wasn't out there, you know, whipping up a gun frenzy. And I don't know of any liberals that were. You know, that really not a liberal, Ed Schultz. I'm a gun-owning liberal. But even the gun-owning liberal wasn't saying that when in fact the argument could have been fairly made. You know, all that Homeland Security garbage was a lot more dangerous to gun rights than anything that Barack Obama has done. I'm a gun-owning liberal. You've probably heard Mike Malloy on a number of occasions talk about his firearm ownership. It's legal. As long as you don't do something awful with it, it's legal. And I'm beginning to think that there is an element of necessity about it. Driving home from Washington, D.C., I saw scrawled in the dirt and filth and grime of the back of a semi-tractor trailer, "Impeach Obama." Literally written with a finger in the dirt. You know, usually it's "wash me." But among the loony, wildly violent, barely sane, obviously psychopathic right wing, "impeach Obama" gets precedence over "wash me." Somewhere in there, there's an ironic message or notion about America. Wash me versus impeach Obama. For what? For having a garden on the White House grounds? Mother McCree, for what?
Well, he's going to blow for the Obama gun ban.
Find it! Find me the legislation! Find me the plan!
Well, we got one right here. We made it up the other night while I was all drunk out of our minds on the Black Label. And we had us some Keystone Lights and some Milwaukee's Beast and we come up with the Obama gun ban about beer number 17. And we're convinced of it now.
It's hard for me to say this, but I will, and I hope the universe will forgive me, and I hope you'll forgive me, because it hurts me to say it. But I am convinced, by the evidence, by their words, you know, the book, you know, the one, the holy written by their fruits ye shall know them, right, right? These monsters, these right-wing thugs, these beer hall putschniks, they want Barack Obama dead. And that brings me nigh to tears to even contemplate. I don't care who's in the Oval Office. Such a thing would turn this country upside down. It is the sixth day of April 2009. The anniversary of Dr. King's murder was 2 days ago, the 41st one, the 41st anniversary. And just as with the murder of Robert F. Kennedy, just as with the murder of John Kennedy, just as with the murder of Malcolm X, this country is still not over it. But as sure as God made little green apples, and if you sit in a tree and eat them, you'll get the runs. It's what the right wing wants. Because Charles Blow is right, they are apocalyptic, and I am right. They are apoplectic, and we are both right, and you are right, and they have let go of any semblance or pretense of reason. Michelle Bachmann said she wanted Minnesotans armed and dangerous. About 20% of America right now is getting there. And all the right wing has to do is have one get through. I had a conversation with our buddy Reverbo, Critic at Large,
He said, I have it on good authority that the Secret Service cafeteria has been ordered to put amphetamines in the Secret Service agents' food just to keep them alert for all the steady stream of threats that are coming in. And I have no doubt that they are absolutely on their toes. What did they nickname Obama? Renegade? I explained to you why and where that name came from. I hope the hell I'm wrong. But that is a beginning point for this evening. And again, somewhere later in the program, I'll tell you all about my recent journeys. Travels with Agnes in Search of America. And hopefully we can have some Jim Dandy good conversation. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, let's see. Where to begin? She's at it again.
Which one?
Little people with kinder ears. Put your hands over there.
Now, let's not use any fun language if we don't have to. Who's at what?
That crazy, you put in the word from Minnesota.
Ah, Michelle Bachmann, yes. She's professionally insane.
Yes. Now, she's saying Obama wants re-education camps for young people.
Yeah, I know. God, I'm like... Now, well, see, we laugh, and you know, Charles Blow laughs.
Well, it's either laugh or cry.
Yeah, I know.
Because what she's talking about is the Serve America Act.
Right, and see, this is the we were talking about this 2 weeks ago, that they're screaming. I've heard it. I've read it. I've seen it. You know, there was that video during the campaign of the young African American men marching out in fatigues and T-shirts saying, "I have hope. I believe I can be a lawyer. I believe I can be an architect. I believe I can be an engineer." And that just scared whitey America into an absolute water-bowled frenzy.
Well, that's why and I agree with you. They really want Barack Obama dead. That's why. Because you see, pardon my language, this isn't a bad word, it is just reverting to an earlier time. They want that uppity, I'm going to use that word,
yeah. Kid. Yeah, they do.
Because he is not in his place.
They wanted Dr. King dead. They wanted Malcolm X dead. Remember, okay, let's take a little toddle down the history's memory lane, Susan. The night that John Kennedy was assassinated, the Reagans were hosting a cocktail party that they refused to call off.
They applauded.
And there was applause in the room.
Oh, yeah. Here's another.
John Wayne was there and just yucked it up. Well,
yeah,
Pilgrim, I guess he got what was coming to him, that commie lover.
Here's another little-known fun fact. The day John Kennedy was killed in an exclusive suburb of Dallas, when the teacher announced that Kennedy had been killed, there was spontaneous applause led by her. A few years later, somebody coming out of that same school system in that same suburb proceeded to put a bullet in Ronald Reagan.
Round and round the mulberry bush.
The karma goes.
Yep.
And I remember seeing some of the, when Martin Luther King was killed, I remember seeing some of the local free birds where I lived, and they were just gleeful right up until the riots started. And then they were afraid because they were afraid the black guys were going to come and rape their women.
Yeah, going to come get the... Yeah. Oh, my God. Dear God. Jesus.
Oh, God. And I can remember, Poppy. Do you know the most violent thing I have ever done as far as it came to the Bush administration?
What?
I wondered whether or not it would be considered a threat if I...
Sent him a bag of pretzels.
Cheney, a pound of bacon.
Oh, okay. I was thinking pretzels, but yeah. Yeah, that's just funny.
That's about as violent as I get. But I got news for you. We've got guns.
But you don't have any plans on putting them to work.
Oh, no. But I can tell you this, if necessary, they're the type you don't got to aim much. And a shotgun is real messy.
Goes in about the size of a, well, you know, number four. It goes in about the size of a baseball, comes in.
Yeah.
Comes out about the size of basketball. Oh, I know. I know.
Because I know what these people are like. And I won't go down. I'll go down. Hey, I'm a firm believer in taking an honor guard. I'll go down, but I'm going to take somebody to pay the ferryman's fee.
But see, that's the thing that has to be borne in mind, Susan. It's not going to be you or me.
It's going to be some poor. Well, for one thing, they're going to try for Barack Obama. So that means it's probably going to be some Secret Service agent who's going to stop a bullet. Or some postal employee who's going to open an envelope and it's going to be full of anthrax. Because I don't for a minute believe that they actually caught that guy.
You know, Susan, it's driving him absolutely buggy that he's gone to Europe and he's actually started setting to rights all the things that George Bush set to wrong.
And it is probably a really, really sad commentary on our society, but the man is probably safer in Europe. He's probably safer in Turkey, a Muslim nation, than he is here.
Well, Lord knows Angela Merkel is safer around him than she was around Bush. Sorry, couldn't resist.
Well, I can't blame you. But he is.
Yeah, yeah.
What does that say about this country? What does it this sick, sick country.
Now, see, Susan, why do you got to talk? Why do you hate America?
I don't hate it, because if I hated it, I would...
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, that was me being facetious. Yeah, these morons. These morons equate dealing with reality with not loving America. I mean, good God, you've got the Hannity job out there.
Yeah, I want to.
And he's doctoring tape. He's down to doctoring tape.
Yeah, I've got to ask you something. You mentioned the Pittsburgh shootings. I asked this of John, and he couldn't give me an answer. Maybe you can. Why aren't Hannity and Beck and Limbaugh being charged as accessories?
Because the causal link is entirely too tenuous, Susan.
Obama gun ban? That's straight out of the right-wing echo chamber.
Yeah, but it's not Obama gun ban, go shoot a cop. Now, bear in mind that if it was me, if I was a member of the family of one of those three police officers, now, a criminal charge, it's too tenuous, but it's not too tenuous for a civil suit, because the standard of proof in a criminal case is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. The standard of proof in a criminal case, or in a civil case, depending on the jurisdiction, is usually described as being a preponderance of the evidence or 50% plus .00001, more likely than not. You know, it's not even clear and convincing. Not only is it not reasonable doubt, it's not clear and convincing. It's just more likely than not.
Yeah.
Simple majority.
That would be sweet. Because I got to tell you, every one of these right-wingers is multimillionaire. If any of the Pittsburgh family is listening, or anybody who knows them, tell them, sue the bejesus out of these people.
Lawyer up.
Lawyer up and go after them.
Yep. Exactly.
Because, yep.
Well, I hope I will be here all week long this time through, so we will likely have more conversations this week, Susan.
One last item.
Yes.
And I hate to be a buzzkill. I'm sorry, I'm your professional buzzkill.
I'd have to have a buzz first, but we'll take that as read.
That's true. Air Force Staff Sergeant Philip Myers came home today.
Oh, I know.
And it broke my heart.
But we saw him come home today.
Yeah. And every person in the United States needs to go to the New York Times website or to the Horn website once we get it back up, because I'll be putting it up, and see that picture.
I have a feeling we will see more. And, you know, I think this is,
oh, yeah,
this is the right way to handle it. It is okay to photograph, subject to the consent of the family.
Of the family, yes. And that boy didn't have to die. Damn you, George Bush.
I know. But you know what? There's another good thing about this. I remember when the military got caught offloading dead soldiers with forklifts.
Yeah.
This remedies that too. There's a reason sunshine is the best disinfectant.
Oh, and one good piece of good news. Gates has announced that they're dumping that god awful fighter jet.
Yeah, the F-22 Gonzo.
Yeah.
And I found it. Maybe I just missed this. Even Rumsfeld wanted to get rid of that boondoggle.
Yeah, and as well as the new helicopter fleet that Obama said he didn't need. And what they're going to do is they're going to be, among other things, using it for the VA.
Good.
Isn't that a nice thought?
That's rational. Susan, take care and say hi to Donald for us.
Okay, and get my love to Agnes.
Sure will. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
And rolling onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
You know, I think it's our turn to tell them if they don't like the real United States, which we're starting to get a little bit of it back, and in a better way, why don't they go somewhere else? Where everybody thinks just alike. Why don't they go to China or whatever? Where everybody thinks just is commanded to think just alike.
It's a fair question. Why don't they?
A little suggestion I have. I mean, they've told us for years that we should go to some other place. I think it's time that they should. But anyway, you know Neil Cabuto.
Yeah.
Did you see him in his little act?
I'm not sure which act. I mean, it's always a train wreck whenever that man's in front of a camera. But
I've never watched that guy to my knowledge. But they played him on The Young Turks. You know, I like The Young Turks,
mm-hmm.
And I usually listen to them on Saturdays. And, you know, all together, because I am a member, but I'm, you know, not a paying member either. But anyway, they played him, and he had a congressman on, and I can't remember his name. And his voice was just so shrill, and he was browbeating this guy, and, you know, saying, you're taking away the bonuses from these people. I think he said something about they won't all be in. Well, what are they going to get? What do you call too much? You know, they're being getting too much? What do you call too much? And he said, that's up to the Treasury Secretary to decide. And, oh, you don't want to say. Why don't you say something? I'm trying to get you to say. And it's in this real shrill voice, and he just goes on and on and on. And I have an answer for him. And I think this would be a pretty fair, a lot more fair than they do us little people, that we the people that run the country, that really do run the country, so they can get up and pontificate, or whatever you call it, how do you pronounce it. Anyway, let them have minimum wage for their bonuses.
Works
that's
for me.
More fair than what the little people, because like so many places, but you've got to check, if you're on an hourly wage, you've got to check out after 8 hours or the 40 hours, because they're not going to pay you any overtime.
Oh, no, God
forbid.
All these
nurses, you know, that are working in these nursing homes and retirement homes, they have to do it, or they can get fired immediately. And so I think that would be more fair to these people. You know, he was talking about, he was fussing at this congressman about telling these people what they should be allowed to be making. Well, they're telling we the people what we would be allowed to be making.
Yeah.
To me, that's logical.
No, it doesn't fail the test with me.
But as I was talking to my son today, these jobs, some of these jobs you have are there's no logic at all. And one other thing I'd like to ask about this, what is it, the employer's choice?
Employee free choice, EFCA.
Right. What would be the harm that everybody would have a union, and those who don't want one don't have to join it and don't have to take any of the benefits? They could just do it on their own.
Oh, no, it doesn't work that way.
I know, but why not?
Because the nature of a union, well, there's an organization here in West Virginia, and they are made up, they are comprised of organized labor groups, the ACT Foundation. And they have a motto, and their motto is, if you're working in West Virginia, we're working for you. Not if you're in a union and working in West Virginia. If you're working in West Virginia.
They work for everybody.
And, you know, the idea being that, for instance, and this is some rather arcane and complex and hard to, there's something called prevailing wage in most every state. There's prevailing wage on the federal level that's dictated by the Davis-Bacon Act. And it says that, you know, the basic upshot is that we're not going to build taxpayer-funded projects on the cheap and screw the working people. We're going to pay a fair wage. And that prevailing wage gets paid whether you're union or non-union. So that, you know, if you're non-union and you're not paying into a health care plan, you're actually getting a higher hourly rate. But you're getting that higher hourly rate in large part because of the efforts of union folk.
Right.
I understand the upshot of what you're saying, Juanita, but the fact of the matter is,
I know what the realism is. I'm talking about what maybe it should be. I'm a hypothesis or whatever. Just hypothetic.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about, when there's a strike and they get what they call scabs to work, why should they get paid what those other people have worked so hard for? Why should they get paid for that when for taking another person's job?
I understand your point completely.
But the thing is that they do. I know that, you know, my folks were union all the way. I've never been privileged to work in a place where there was a union, because
what a sad commentary that is.
Oh, there's very few. The best one that I know of that was ever down here was with the phone company, And the phone company finally finagled their way out of that. You know, they started just hiring people for part-time and, you know. But I'm just saying in a idealistic world, you know, that if people don't want it, and I know people that hate the union, and I don't think they know why they hate the union.
Well, you know, unions' days come and gone. There was a time when workplaces abused workers, but that don't happen no more. Bull.
Well, they didn't want it when there was all that known about abuse. There's still abuse.
Sure, there is.
It's a deep subject, ain't it, Bob?
It's
too deep.
No, it really does. It really does run deep.
You know, I mean, we've down here for years. We've had these migrant workers that. They, you know, people are complaining, well, they get the jobs, and we don't. Well, that's not offered to the people down here. There's a lot of people who would do those, but no, these people like your Catherine Harris and Putnam, you know, they come from these agriculturist family. You know, her father was the richest man in Florida. I mean, her grandfather, he was a billionaire, and his family, they're all millionaires at least, maybe billionaires, I don't know. And they had these secret work camps down here, and the people were treated horrible. I worked with a lot of them when I was working for the Department of Agriculture. I worked with a lot of migrants from, you know, they called them all Mexicans, but there were a lot of people who were citizens of the United States. They were Spanish. Some of them were from Mexico, but I met some wonderful people that I would have never met before. But a lot of them were treated just like dogs, and some of the housing, it was abhorrent that these rich people, and most of them in citrus, because that was the biggest crop for years down here. Now you don't see so much of it. But anyway, my folks were migrant workers. They worked out. They worked field work. They worked. They picked oranges and all. Everything. They got the jobs that they could. But later on, these jobs were not offered to the local people because they didn't want to pay them.
Well, remember anytime somebody calls themselves a conservative. If you drill down on them a little bit, Juanita, you will find that conservatism, no matter how much they talk about, you know, saving the unborn snowflake babies or anything like that, ultimately conservatism boils down to wanting somebody out there to work for cheap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then these people, they get into the positions of power, like Catherine Harris so desired to be. But her grandfather ran for governor. He never won, but he was a billionaire. These people made their money in citrus on the backs of my family and the migrants. Some illegal and quite a few citizens of the United States born here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's,
I'm just, you know.
It drives me crazy because the Employee Free Choice Act is a no-brainer. And to give credit where credit is due, that thing, if it hasn't already, is going to sail through the House of Representatives. But because we don't have a majority leader in the Senate with just a whole lot of spine, you know, I'm still kind of stinging over Harry Reid saying, you know, you left-wing people, you're not helping.
Oh, yeah. I know.
You know, it leave us alone. We can capitulate to the Republicans by ourselves. And, you know, my God, I've got a story here, Juanita, that just makes me scream.
What is it?
GOP threatens Obama's legal nominees over release of torture memos. Basically, the Republicans in the Senate are saying that they're going to filibuster like crazy people if President Obama carries out his previous intent to release some of the torture memos to the public. They're saying it right out loud, right out there for everybody to see, everybody to hear, that if President Obama acts within the scope of his presidential authority, that they will make sure that his appointees don't get through the Senate. Now, how much more, Juanita, how much more does Harry Reid need before he looks up and realizes that he is dealing with a bunch of punks?
Well, maybe he's one of them. But we don't know it yet for sure. But ooh, he sure does act like it.
Sometimes he certainly does.
And, you know, I want Evan Barr and his mug nose theft tossed out for sure. And I never did find out who all the eight were that voted against Obama's, that voted for the Republican budget.
I don't have that in front of me, but I do know that a whole gang of senators, Democrats, got together with Republicans.
Eight Democrats.
No, more than this, got together
really?
to put the screws to President Obama's environmental plans.
Oh yeah, and also medical help.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and always the Cossack, one of your fellow Floridians, Juanita, in the chat room, is noting that, again, John Cornyn from Texas, again with the eliminationist rhetoric, he says he's gunning, that's his word, gunning for Don Johnson. Now, she's the nominee to head the Office of Legal Counsel.
Hmm.
And John Cornyn has said he is gunning for her.
Oh, boy.
I get so sick of it.
I know it. I know.
You know, a Republican can't talk about something that he or she opposes without running to eliminationist bloodletting rhetoric.
Yeah.
And that's and that's the biggest part of what's wrong with this country.
We'd already be under the jail.
Darn right. You know, the crankiest us liberals get is to say that we're going to hold Obama's feet to the fire.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we don't, but never mind.
But, you know, I've been so proud of him all week.
He's done great.
He sure has.
But the right-wing frenzy, oh my God, Michelle touched the royal person.
Yeah. She touched her first. She touched her. I saw it.
I saw it too. But,
jail.
But that didn't stop. You know, that doesn't stop the right wingers like Laura Ingraham from what? Well, you know, it was a week ago maybe when. Or maybe maybe 2 weeks ago when whoever that weirdo was who was sitting in for Laura Ingraham called Michelle and Barack Obama trash.
Oh, you're talking about the Bruce woman?
Yes.
Tammy, you know what? I know who. I found out later on that I did know who she was. I just didn't remember her name. She used to be head of NOW, and she has turned so right-wing for...
I don't think she was head of... I don't think she was the head of NOW.
I thought she was, but...
Maybe she was a member thereof.
But anyway, she's turned probably before Bush got in, she's turned right-wing big time. And she claims to be a lesbian, a right-winger, or a lesbian whatever.
Yeah, a gun-toting right-wing lesbian.
Yeah. And that's who she, I remember her. Yeah. If she finds out something, then you can take it to the bank. You just, well, forget about thinking on your own or thinking of anything else. She's got the answer, and forget about anything else, no matter what the subject is. And she says,
from God's mouth to her ear, sure.
Yeah. And you heard about that girl that was on, woman that was on Law and Order. She said that Republicans were nicer than we were. These people are not nice at all. I mean, you could just go on and on, Bob. There's no end to it.
And, you know, there's something else that I heard driving home. I remember being on the air a week or so ago when we gave the barest of sad mention to the passing of Natasha Richardson. And I said, you watch. Some right winger out there will claim that the Canadian medical system killed her. And lo and behold, I'm driving home from D.C. I'm down I-81, and what do I hear coming over, coming from Flush Flimball's filthy mouth?
Yeah.
But some ditto head caller calling in and saying, it was that socialized medicine that caused her to die. I promise, Juanita, it's not prophecy. I just know these evil bastards for what they are. Sorry.
Yeah, you're right. You're so right. And it just goes on and on. And they're so jealous. It's like when they were in power, they had everything. They still were that way. It's like Bill Maher never will forget. He said, you people are poor winners. You know, as opposed to being poor losers. And they are. They're never satisfied. They have the whole power, and they're never satisfied.
Okay.
Ever.
And there it is, Cossack letting me know. Tammy Bruce was elected president of the Los Angeles chapter of NOW at the age of 27.
Okay. Well, maybe she claimed that she was the president.
But now she describes herself as an openly gay, pro-choice, gun-owning, pro-death penalty, voted for President Bush, authentic feminist.
Oh gosh!
Almost enough to make you eat radishes and run rabbits.
Malkin or McCaulkin?
Malkin, yeah. Malkin, whatever.
He got into that thing too about, you know, how dare they say what these people can get for a bonus? You know, how dare they do that? Well, they dare do what they want to with us. With now, I'm on Social Security right now, and they dare to tell me what I can get and what I can't get. You know, they dare to do that. Am I not as good? No, I know I'm not as good in their eyes as
none of us are.
Well, people that don't know how to run a business without robbing it blind.
Or running it into the ground.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and that's the thing, you know, where's the anger of the shareholders?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess they're just too shell-shocked from having just been wiped out. But,
yeah.
You know, these were business geniuses that destroyed it.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I guess it's been reported that Barack Obama has said to some greedy Wall Street bankster, listen, Buster, I'm the only thing standing between you and the pitchforks and torches.
I love that. When I heard that, I said, I love it. They said he brought them all in a meeting, and they were all complaining about, we should do this and this and do this and that. And he told them that he said, my administration is the only thing standing between you and the pitchforks, you and the pitchforks. And, you know.
Yeah, don't make me sick my citizen army on you. Oh, God.
Yeah. You know, I saw by accident, I saw this show where people were fighting back, you know, when they were being robbed at these stores. And one of them was so cute because she was, little bitty tiny little woman, you know, probably from India. We have a lot of Indians that run the little stores down here. And I don't know where it was, but this big guy comes in, he's all masked up. And it's on film. And he tells her he wants the money. And she's fiddling around trying to find the panic button. She can't find it. And the guy kind of turns around again, away from her, and then she finally finds it. So then he turns around from her again, and she finds an axe. I mean, a big axe. And that little lady, he turned around, and she had already started swinging at him. I mean, she had that thing over her back like she'd been chopping lumber for years. And she was swinging at him, and he looked so startled. And it didn't take but two or three swings for it. The man started running. And she took off after him. She said, I wanted him caught. But they lost him, you know. They didn't catch him. But see, now, that's what I've been using. I don't have a gun. But, honey, I got one of them axes. And my son bought me this small but heavy sledgehammer that I sleep with. And I think I was being trying to be, somebody tried to break in on me. I don't know if it was Friday night or what. It was like 4:30 in the morning. I'm waking up with all these knocks around my place. I'm thinking my cats are making a racket. And I finally get up because I know that somebody having to go outside all around. And I said, hollered out, and I said, who's there? And they said, is your husband home? And I said, yes, he is. And they said, oh, my wife and I were stranded, you know, and something. I couldn't understand everything, but that does happen from time to time. People want money. And so I imitate, I said, I thought, well, I better make it sound like my husband is here.
Oh, why, so
yeah. I said, hey, what's going on? Who's here? And, you know, they left. So my neighbor, I got a real nice neighbor, and I thought about calling him. I thought, no, it's 4:30 in the morning. So I have to hunt around to find the sheriff department because I thought these people are going up and down the road. They're going to bother somebody else. And so I finally called the number, and they had to come out, you know. But they were, you know, really sweet. And believe me, I've had some bad experiences with policemen. But anyway, they were both, it was a man and woman. And while we're out there talking, here comes somebody walking by us. Because the woman said, I've been driving up and down. I haven't seen anybody. And I said, well, there's somebody there now. So they go out and start talking to him. But the policeman said, you call 911 from now on. You don't have to wait to look up the number.
That's true. That's good advice.
But I'm going to tell you, I got an axe. Anybody wants to come here? I can shoot a gun. I just don't have one.
Sure.
Because I don't know how to take care of them, for one thing.
Well, and yeah, you live down somewhere that a gun can... Yeah, that salt air is hard on the
yeah.
the metal of a
but
pistol.
But those axes stay sharp for a long time.
Oh yeah, they do. Yeah,
and
they
I
do.
I couldn't use one as good as that little lady. But she said, I don't know what came over me. I just had to do something.
Well, so, yeah, you've engendered a little fan mail, Juanita. Susan just wrote in to say, jumping up and down and waving and clapping. Yay for Juanita. You tell them, honey. Let them leave.
Okay. And I'm proud of her, too. You know, I told you I want her to be in Congress.
Yeah, I know. Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Me, too.
All right.
And welcome back, and I hope everything was successful or going to be successful.
We're making more progress than I would ever dream possible.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Juanita.
Night-night.
Bye now. Our View correspondent and woman not to be trifled with at 4 a.m., Juanita calling from South Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, what's happening?
You know, I'm going to be sending Juanita a cleaning bill for using that scary voice on me. Ooh, my pants. Now, I'll tell you, you know, I just got to say, and it was a wonderful opening, what you laid out. You basically laid a beautiful foundation for what I would like to discuss, and so did Dr. Rick Goodner right before your show. And I just kind of wanted to touch on this before it leaves my mind. Is he regarded as politics, as that's his sport? And I'm going to say the same thing for myself, and I think for most of us that pay attention to these things. You know, politics is our sport. And what is politics? It's basically, it should be conversing and trying to, you know, lay out, you know, common ground and this and this and that. And I just got to say also, to use another sports analogy, is that our jujitsu right now, as left-wing people, our jujitsu has to be impeccable. We have these people, okay, this segment of our consciousness, okay, these right-wingers, and they're there. You got to take them for what they are, okay? We have these people freaked completely out, okay? They're panicking. They're swinging for the fences in like a UFC fight. They're throwing everything behind their punches. They're leaving themselves open in so many other areas. And the one thing that we do not want to do is stand in front of them and give them something solid underneath which they can build anything. We need to keep them completely mired in their own
madness,
fear, their own panic. Fear is the mind killer. I remember, you know, we talked about
this before
the elections. Fear is the mind killer.
Not to be too hard, though, Albert. Doesn't one have to have a mind for fear to kill it?
Amen to that. I'll tell you, I certainly agree with that. But at this, I mean, that's why, you know, it's like the funny thing is when right winger, it makes me laugh, when they try to predict the future, you see, that makes me laugh because you really can't predict the future if you don't have any concept of logic. If you sit there and listen to them, okay, they are trying to use magic, okay, to create issues. And the one thing that I heard them do it, and I don't know if it's a right winger doing it or what, but on Crooks and Liars this weekend, when this disgusting neo-Nazi freak did whatever his paranoid fantasies came to reality, you know, or what he fabricated it, you know, when they did that, you know, what do you hear? Oh, we gotta go grab these guns. You can't go and do that. You can't just sit there and say, oh, yep, we have to go get the guns, because then you are fabricating a reality that is tangible now. All right? There is actual factual basis in it, and the one thing you don't want to give these people is anything solid to stand on. I saw a very, very, very touching documentary last night regarding this man who lives in Africa, and you may have seen him. He has lions that are like, they accept him as one of their own. He has hyenas. He has, I mean, everything, you know, and these things are, you know, some of the most powerful predators on the planet. And he can go in. The mother will give him their cub. I mean, just touchingly amazing. He trains these animals and he does it all with understanding their signs. He understands when they're going to, you know, when they don't want him around, and they understand when he does want him around. When you see the film of him doing, you know, with these animals, you would be freaking, it brings tears to your eyes to sit there and imagine a 900-pound male lion wanting him to scratch under his chin like a big cat, but holding him, and you're not going anywhere. I want a face rub. You know, when you sit there and you think of what that man has accomplished or what he shows us, and I mean, in a sense, how to deal with these freaks, we have to essentially understand what they're doing, and at the same time, we can't give them anything to be afraid of. We have to realize that their signals, that these signals of, oh, you know, these freaks, and I know it's going to happen, and it's sad, and it hurts my blood, okay, to think of these just maniacs running around, you know, thinking, you know, these paranoid delusions. And the thing is we don't have to go and grab all the guns. We can go and grab the guns from these people that are fighting invisible enemies, because essentially that's what they're doing. You know, think of how paranoid they are. They're so paranoid that he thinks it's an Obama gun grab. What the? I mean, seriously, that's ridiculous. So don't give these people any ammunition. I'm not trying to say, you know, but at the same time, you know, if somebody's standing on a building and they're jumping off a building, you don't take the building out from underneath them. You try to talk them down. You try to say, you know, and maybe it gives, you know, justice to your life or what have you, or a valid reason to live, you know, if you can convince this person that they should take another breath. But, you know, that's basically where I see them. I see them on this precarious ledge. I see us as, I see the consciousness coming together so much faster now. I see people sitting there when they see these events, and just like, I forget the man's name who wrote the article, but just like the article you read, I mean, just, we're firing on all cylinders. We're doing good. And what we can't wind up doing is trying to do things like the way they would try to do things. They would try to grab the guns, and they would try to do these things. I mean, you know, under Bush, yeah, I understand he couldn't play around like that, but there was a couple of times there where, but that Homeland Security, just like you pointed out, I mean,
we saw it go down in New Orleans.
Oh, exactly.
This isn't paranoid conspiracy theory. We saw it go down in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Where was the NRA on the Bush gun ban then? Crickets.
Very quiet.
Crickets.
Very quiet, yeah. They made a little sound regarding it, but they were pretty much,
Well, and of course, it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. It's never slowed me down before. The NRA wasn't particularly upset because of whose guns were being seized. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know. And that was, the local sheriff called for it and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. And I've actually had a couple of discussions with a couple of those people on the internet. And, you know, that's kind of the rationale they try to bring up. And, you know, but then at the same time, they're freaking out over Obama going to freaking Notre Dame, you know, for give a speech. Cause,
oh,
know,
yeah, that, I saw that a week ago. And you know, I got to tell you, I go through some stories, Albert, and I just go, you know, shut up. Not to you, but...
No. Yeah, no.
Yeah, scroll. Shut up, scroll. You too. Yeah, scroll. And you as well. Just, mm-hmm. I mean...
Just put it on the pile. Just put it on the pile and say, I mean, that's why we can sit there, you know, we're building evidence for this case of their consciousness. I mean, that's where they are. They literally have nothing underneath them.
Take for example, and I love sharing audio clips with you because we have so much fun when I do. Take for example, Newt Gingrich.
Oh, he's a...
Now, this guy is, well, this is, of course, from Fox News, Fox News Sunday. This guy is strict. I think he's drinking strychnine or something. Or bad moonshine. I don't know. Not Georgia's finest, Georgia's worst. I mean, he's drinking the stuff that was filtered through somebody's old radiator with a little Prestone, you know, a little Prestone for flavor and lighter fluid for character. You know, that whole thing from No Time for Sergeants.
Well, I saw this clip that you're talking about, and I was surprised I didn't see gold paint all stuck around his mouth and chin. He's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just got to get out there.
Mr. Gingrich, what do you make of the president's speech today in which he called for new limits and, in fact, the elimination eventually as a goal of all nuclear weapons at the same time, as I discussed with David Axelrod, that he wants a cut in missile defense?
There's a fascinating analysis of Jimmy Carter's Notre Dame speech when he spoke at the commencement in 1977. And that was the moment in which Carter's fantasy view of the world became clear, in the beginning, I think, of the end of his administration. The president's in a world where Hamas is firing missiles every day into Israel, Iran is building nuclear weapons, and the North Koreans today, during his speech, fired a missile. And he has some wonderful fantasy idea that we're going to have a great meeting next year with who? I mean, who's coming to this meeting? The Pakistanis? The Indians? The Chinese? The Russians? And what are they going to promise? And why would you believe them? I just think that it's very dangerous to have a fantasy foreign policy, and it can get you in enormous trouble, just like giving, you know, we don't have a war on terror anymore. We don't have terrorist attacks anymore. So now Homeland Security has man-made disasters. I'm somehow not comforted with the thought that 9/11 was a man-made disaster, but not a terrorist attack. And I'm not comforted with words instead of serious systematic policy.
Okay, Albert, so get it. You know, he says Obama has a fantasy foreign policy.
Yeah, he's a goddamn idiot. And you know what?
but it's so much. I'm going somewhere, so you know, you got to kind of work with me here. This is so much fun. The guy accuses the president of having a fantasy foreign policy. Well, a week before that, in fulminating and having a real twisted knicker hissy fit over the North Korean missile launch, right?
Which failed, by the way.
I've had more effective bottle rockets.
Yeah, the universe is proving something to me, anyway. Good.
Yeah. But he's all worried about it, and he wants to provoke North Korea. Okay?
Yeah.
This is that.
Let me switch gears. North Korea, they're about to launch something.
What do
we do about North Korea? What should we do about it?
I think we should be very worried. My good friend and co-author Bill Fortune just wrote a book called One Second After, which is a novel about what happens with an electromagnetic pulse attack. There's no question that the newest kind of nuclear weapons, three of them right at the right altitude, could eliminate all electricity production in the United States, which includes your car. It would mean that we would go back to a pre-industrial era overnight, in seconds. It's a very serious threat.
Even the coal
I don't
work.
Think North Korea should be allowed to launch missiles. I think we should take whatever preemptive actions are necessary. The idea that we're going to suddenly be shocked one morning because one of these missiles has a nuclear weapon and does something that dramatically changes America, I think is a very dangerous idea, and I find it very difficult to
the
watch the U.S. government
coming.
be passive as the North Korean dictatorship continues to develop its capacity to deliver nuclear weapons.
How did we get to this point? I mean, we were speaking to them, we were talking for a while, but now, you know, they've got this on the launch pad, and you know, it's like, and between April 4th and April 8th, you know, something's going up someplace.
Greta, I don't want to sound too bold, but whether it's Hamas in Gaza, it's the Iranians and their nuclear program, it's the North Koreans and their nuclear program and missiles, we in the West, in the democracies, have a propensity to lie to ourselves, just as we did in the 1930s about Adolf Hitler and about Nazism. And I think we have been kidding ourselves. The North Koreans have been steadily working towards this capacity. The Iranians are laughing at us as
we're
they continue
to
build
part.
More and more centrifuges to build the capacity for nuclear weapons. Hamas laughs at us as they continue to fire missiles into Israel, while Israel gets blamed for responding.
Missiles.
These are real enemies. And in the long run, sooner or later, we're going to have to recognize that changing the regime is the only way to change the behavior, because these dictatorships are not going to change of their own. I don't care how long we talk to them. And I think the Obama idea of respecting them and being courteous.
You know, I got to interrupt just for a second, Albert, to say that.
I had to sit down again.
Yeah, I know, because we're not to the good part yet. But Newt is beginning to remind me of one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite comedies, The In-Laws, where Nancy Dessau says, and I'm paraphrasing now, that crazy little bastard's involved your poor country in something. Who wouldn't this little just lunatic attack?
Yeah.
You know, how much of North Korea is poised on the border of the, you know, the DMZ there, the you know, to overrun the 50,000 troops or so? How many? Just checking. Because, you know, we're still at war. We don't have a peace treaty with them. It's just a ceasefire. It can get hot in a real hurry. But that's okay, because Newt's... Newt's the man with a plan. Are you ready for the plan?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sorry.
Curious to them and communicating with them. It implies that they're fools. Kim Jong-il knows exactly what he's doing.
We have 1 minute left. If you were president, what would you do about this North Korea problem?
I would use whatever methods were necessary for the missile never to be launched. And I think you could do it.
So that's military. Are you saying military?
If necessary, if I can't find a way to bribe somebody to blow it up, I'd find a way to have either a small team go in or a way to deliver either a laser or another kind of device. This is a missile.
Yeah, okay, so you got that, Albert? He's going to blow up the North Korean missile with a laser.
Bob, you have a window? I'm sitting, I'm hovering outside your window right now in the Navigator. Hi.
Hey, Albert. Damn, you are.
Yeah. All right, hang on. Oh, no, I'm back.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we have that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
But at this point, Newt Gingrich has just transformed himself into, and I suggest this only for reality purposes, okay? This is what Newt Gingrich has become.
Mr. Powers, you'll notice that all of the sharks have laser beams attached to their heads. I figure every creature deserves a warm meal.
Dr. Evil, it's about the sharks. When you were frozen, they were put on the endangered species list. We tried to get some, but it would have taken months to clear up the red tape.
You know, I have one simple request, and that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads. Now, evidently, my cycloptic colleague informs me that that can't be done. Can you remind me what I pay you people for? Honestly, throw me a bone here. What do we have?
Sea bass.
Right.
They are mutated sea bass.
Really? Are they ill-tempered?
Absolutely.
That's a start.
He is. Give me some frickin' laser beams.
He's ridiculous. I mean, this is, I mean, oh, my God. What the? But, see, this is the scary thing. Here's the thing. Right now, we've hatched out of that world. And now we're looking back at the carnage of, you know, that of the shells and the yolks and the bleh, and all that mucus. I mean, that's what they are. That's where they are. They're in a world that doesn't exist. They're in a, you know, Iron Eagle 5, you know, they're in that kind of world.
Wolverines!
Wolverines, Red Dawn, you know, they're idiots. They're so stupid. It's ridiculous. They think that Obama's coming to take their guns because their dog peed on their mom's floor. And then he said, hey, no, F you, mom. No, F you, son. And next thing you know, she calls the cops. And they're coming to take my guns. No, ass. They're probably coming to tell you to stop talking to your mother like that. And that's it. They leave. You don't got to let them know. Hey, what are you? What are you, huffing paint? You think everybody knows what the hell you're thinking or what you're... And then, you know, this is the thing, is you notice that the woodwork is just pouring. They're just getting squeezed out of the woodwork. And I think that's consciousness at work. They're sitting there talking about fantasy things that I would love.
Did you catch the phlegm ball hissy, Albert?
My goodness, I can't tolerate that. I can't. It hurts my blood. I know what they're going to say.
They have taxed me out of New York. This confiscatory tax policy of the New York Democrat Party I will never do another show from New York. And the New York Post, Albert, not the Times, the New York Post says, well, that's one less drug addict for New York City.
And they just relaxed the laws, Rush. What are you doing? Honestly.
See, I know. It's a struggle, isn't it?
Our jujitsu has to be impeccable. We are dealing with, once again, I bring up that old Little House in the Prairie episode where Pa has to go help the miners get nitroglycerin, and he's got to bring it across the prairie, and it's jiggling.
In the rattling wagon, yes.
Yeah, that's what we're dealing with, honestly. We're dealing with that, and we really can't give them any jugs or jogs. We just need to continue to, just say, hello, there is no green man with you, meth head. There is no green man. Will you stop? Put down the bolt arrow gun there and relax. You don't need it. Chill out. And that's what we have to do. We have to treat these... Yeah, we might not get the new Gingriches, but we can, and I think we can. We can get their kids just to see reality. I know that little 11-year-old's out. I know you're out there, little buddy, and I know you're hearing these things, and I know you're seeing these things. And let me tell you, you will come to the realization one day that, maybe everything you were told when you were a little kid isn't true. There is no Santa Claus. There is no Easter Bunny. And, you know, there is no death, you know, horrible burden that you're going to ever have to face when it comes to a death tax. And they're not going to come take your guns. And there aren't any black helicopters or anything else like that. Just relax. Take a deep breath. And think of the word sustainability. That's the one word that we need to keep in the forefront of everything. Because, you know, when we sit here and look at sustainability, you know, one of the pillars of that is being rational. You know, on all fronts, is sitting there and looking at, you know, when we need to improve our energy production and infrastructure. And you notice all these things are starting to come online now, and they may discover things that they didn't quite realize yet, and then they can build a new $10 billion reactor. But I'd certainly rather pay for a $10 billion reactor than to continually have to worry about North Korea launching nuclear weapons and continually having to be afraid of Pakistan doing this and doing this and doing that and doing this. You know, if you want something from your friends, and if you have a friend that's a mechanic, okay, you bring him a case of beer, you sit there when he's doing the work, and I'm sure he'd fix your car to the umpteenth level, all right? He'd make sure that thing ran forever, okay? But that's the thing is, you gotta give a little to get a little. You can't let North Korea be afraid of us, okay?
To be fair, Albert, let's not just think it's us. I mean, let's... Oh, I know.
People like Newt Gingrich and those freaks, they give them good reason to be afraid. They're always talking about...
Because they're nuts!
They're mad. You know? And so that's... And I think that shows the whole... That shows the whole scheme.
I mean, Pakistan. Take China. India. North Korea. Why would North Korea, and this is not a rhetorical question, looking at the map, why would North Korea feel the need to own a nuclear device.
Exactly.
And it ain't necessarily us.
Exactly.
China's up there.
You know, I mean,
why does India want a nuclear device?
Oh, exactly.
Because
exactly.
China's up there and Pakistan's over there. So why does Pakistan want a nuclear device? Because India's down there and China's over there. So why does Iran, assuming that they do, want a nuclear device? Well, you got Israel with 250 of them pointed at their heads. You've got crazy-ass people in Pakistan who hate the flavor of religion that the Iranians are.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the Saudis to the south who have behind them at a finger the United States ready to turn Iran into glass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would any of these little countries, no matter how belligerent or how bellicose their rhetoric, why would they feel the need to possess a nuclear device?
Exactly. Same reason when NATO needs an axe and Susan needs AK-47. And, yeah, I mean, it's that's really, you know, this is Prophet Bill Hicks talk again. You know, we have two choices on how we can take this ride, through the eyes of fear or through the eyes of love. Right, the eyes of fear want us to lock our doors and buy guns and build walls around us, and the eyes of, you know, love want peace and sustainability and these kinds of things. And, you know, if you want to disarm the world, you're not going to do it by force. You're not going to put out the fires in California by pouring gasoline on the freaking coals. You're never going to get peace when all you do is kill. And I think that these old, oh my God, I can't believe we're still talking about this crap, even though it's good because we're about done. I think these old lessons are just going to have to completely bear their fruit. You know, like when they, you know, like the griffin egg and the griffin hat, you know, lays one egg every 1,000 years. Well, this is our time to literally, you know, seize this moment and seize this opportunity to stop. You know, aircraft carriers are becoming obsolete. They have missiles now that can take them out. Okay, so when, you know, when we're sitting there looking at weapons, this is almost like, you know, the personal body shields from Dune. You know, those kinds of things rendered firearms and laser guns and all that other stuff, rendered them obsolete. And they had to go back to, if they wanted to kill somebody, they had to get a dagger and they had to do it with an art form. And if you want to kill somebody, at least you do it to their face. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not a big about murder or nothing like that. And don't get me wrong, I would feel bad. And the image of the dude who's running down my street with a freaking gun shooting at cops, well, I'm sorry, I'd have to try to help. Okay, and yeah, sure, the image of his lifeless body falling on the ground would haunt me forever. But just knowing that, you know, he's not like one of these other idiots that goes and kills themselves, but first, they're going to take their 5 kids with them, which just also happened this past weekend. You know, we need to get completely out of this mindset. We need to completely shed these old scabs like Newt Gingrich and the little pustules like Sean Hannity and these filthy, just degenerate freaks out there that believe this crap about guns and this and this and this. We need to, and Pakistan and all these other countries, everybody needs to come to a human consensus that we need to stop wasting all this money. We, especially, more than everybody, we need to sit here and stop wasting all this money on ways to kill each other. Good. Get rid of that Raptor. Get rid of this. Get rid of them submarines and those nuclear ICBMs. Get rid of them. They're like anchors around our, they're the albatross on our neck. And here we are in the wide, wide Sargasso Sea, stuck. Okay? We need to get this albatross off our neck. We need to evolve as people. You know, all right, we can argue about snowflake babies and all that crap later. We need to completely, though, evolve. I know, I'm in a fantasy world. I'm in the fantasy world that the world can be a peaceful place where we, you know, could come together and make sure our planet's clean, our spaceships, you know, in working order, and maybe perhaps one day we'll step out into the stars as a whole. You know, I believe that we can see a world like that. And that's versus the world where I think I can go and kick anyone's ass, I think, and I can take you and take this and take this, and I own you and you owe me. And that world is not the world that we need to even contemplate.
No, I mean, look at the numbers. Look at the numbers, Albert. Mm-hmm. And this is mind-boggling. Our buddy David in South Carolina sent this along. Last month, now, the same thing didn't happen last year in most civilized countries. Last month, In the United States, 22 people were killed in mass shootings in North Carolina, Alabama, and California. April is 6 days old.
Mm-hmm.
13 people dead, 4 injured in Binghamton, New York.
Mm-hmm.
In Washington State, a father shoots his 5 children.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh, 3 police officers killed by a madman. Yep. So that's 5, 8, 11. That's 21 people by April 6th. March was 22 in the whole month. You know, this ain't phases of the moon.
It isn't phases of the moon, but it is at the same time, I'm going to see this as, you know, back when Gandhi was leading his peace, you know, marches against the imperial, you know, empire there of England, you know, people got their heads cracked in. People did die. But, you know, at the same time, they, you know, you got to kind of, you know, it's tough to sit there. And, you know, I know they're going to sit there. Listen, trust me when I tell you. One day, soon, these people that are, you know, firing, you know, free fire zone, and they're shooting at, they're going to realize that there's nobody shooting at them. They'll eventually, the smoke will, and they'll be like, what the hell am I doing? This will happen. It will happen. But at the same time, we can't go and go, oh, you have this weapon, and oh, you have this, and you have that, and you have this, because they're just going to cling to it tighter. It's like, you know, the monkey with his fist in the jar full of nuts. Okay, you know, we're never going to get his hand out of that. You know, that jar, and then the same thing like that. You're never going to get Pakistan to get rid of their weapons if you go and invade them. You're never going to get, you know, Paul Nacek to, you know, heck, you can't even go tell him, hey, stop cursing at your mother who puts a roof over your head and gave you frickin' life. You know, treat your mother with a little respect. That's all they would probably say to him. You know, oh, man, if you hit your mother, you go to jail, okay? But they wouldn't have come and taken your guns. See, you can't even, and that's where they
and
are.
Yet, and yet, I remember very distinctly, I very distinctly remember, Flush Flimball again, my friends, these liberals in their pajamas living in their parents' basements are too, because they're liberals, they're too, wait a minute, this Poplawski guy was living in his mother's basement.
Yeah, so was that other guy that was sending anthrax to Keith Olbermann and Jon Stewart and everything, oh, the
right.
Talcum powder.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
I get your point about the jujitsu. You know, but the problem is they're not. I mean, and they're swinging, but the thing is they're swinging. Their swings, metaphorically speaking, are done with.
They're glancing blows, Bob. They're glancing blows.
Yeah, but it ain't a glancing blow for 3 cops' families in Pittsburgh.
I know that, and that's why I'm kind of talking, maybe, you know, maybe that aggravates people, but I'm talking more on a little bit of a metaphysical level. I'm talking as the whole.
I know.
Whole of consciousness. And I know it's a little out there, and maybe whatever.
Now, I don't think it's out there, but, you know, that old saying that knowledge is power, you know, watch out for these people. Keep an eye open for these people.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Michelle Bachmann isn't kidding. Now, to you and me, she's laughably insane, but there's a whole segment of society, when she says, I want you armed and dangerous, they go, locked and loaded, sister, tell me where to go.
Well, and then, but you see, that's a whole other thing. You know, I mean, I can't say, here I am on the southern, you know, the southern eastern border of Minnesota, and we kind of occupy, you know, the high ground in the Mississippi Valley. So this would be, I mean, if they want to go to war, I mean... You know, this is, and now they're probably gonna. They definitely want to go and invade Iowa because they're letting the gays get married. You know, so that Minnesota, we're gonna have Iowa and Wisconsin and Minnesota, a little tri-state war here, and you know, we're on the high ground. And if they initiate an attack, well, there's certain, you know, things you do have to take sometimes to defend yourself. But I'm talking in the more mundane and casual mind, the collective mind in this respect. We need to be artful. We need to be the flexible reed, okay? We need to survive their temper tantrum, right? You know, when you got a kid freaking out, yeah, sure, they're going to lose their toy, just like Paul Nacek's losing his toy and his freedom, okay? But you don't go and take the sister's toy, and you don't go and, you know, turn, you know, if you got one kid throwing a temper tantrum and you got a house full of, you know, 20 kids, you don't want them all freaking out. My God, how could you even maintain sanity like that? And that's kind of what I'm getting at.
So
yeah,
what's, well, let me ask you then, Albert, what is the jujitsu? What is the means for dealing with, for instance, how does, oh, wow, I'm almost embarrassed to ask this. How does Harry Reid do that?
He doesn't. We do it.
Well, Texas ain't going to throw out John Cornyn for another 6 years.
Well, they're going to be there. I hope Harry Reid, I hope if anything, we can inspire him to grow a frickin' spine. And
because, see, really, I mean, when it's twice now, okay, it's twice that the Republicans can't resist, you know, I'm gunning for Don Johnson. You know, that's John Cornyn gunning for. And they're saying, we're going to go full nuclear and filibuster everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's like, I mean, you know, cue up the Man of La Mancha, for God's sakes, and the impossible dream. To dream the impossible dream. Yeah, that Harry Reid would suddenly go all dirty Harry on it.
Well,
go that way, punk. And then just take their little filibuster away from them and say, we'll give it back to you when you can play nicely with it.
Yeah, well, you know, Dr. Goodner there had the little Senate thing with Barney Frank. And, I mean, I'm starting to kind of hear, like, I think that the patience, you know, that, I mean, I'm telling you, like, if anything, the only thing I can see, if I'm going to give a strategy to what these people are doing, is they're literally giving them no ground to stand on and giving them so much rope that, you know, they can't do anything but hang themselves. And that is a good aspect. That's a good jujitsu right there. If that's what they're doing. I mean, that's what they're doing. If that's what they're doing. All right, now we have to make sure that that is what they're doing.
I know I'm going to be tied up on the 11th. I've got stuff I have to do that Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
But honest to Pete, I would love to go over to Beckley and see this Tea Party meeting.
Go there and drink tea. Go there and drink tea. Get a little tea set, the little ceramic and the porcelain and the cucumber.
No, I want to show up. I want to show up in my Mad Hatter hat with the 6 7/8 in the band. Because, you know, these were the right wingers. It's the Mad Hatter's Tea Party.
Exactly. Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. Do that. And get Agnes to dress up as
Alice.
You know, Alice, and a couple of the kids can be a bunny rabbit, and one can be this, and somebody can
March
be
Hare, with a little Dormouse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Get it. That's beautiful. And then we can get pictures of that, and you can get them with a nice scene. Yeah, you know, just kind of get in there, show them. Show them that, you know, there's probably going to be, what, 12 people there? I mean, not for nothing. You know, it's like, the Freeper meetings for the war. You know, they're having all these rallies.
And that's what I'm saying. Going to this Tea Party meet, if I was to go to this Tea Party event, it would be the weirdest of the weird that Beckley has to offer. I guarantee you that right-wing freakazoid radio guy that our buddy Ed mentions from time to time would be there. And, because it would be like taking my children to the zoo.
Yeah, well, that's, you kind of got to expose them to these things, you know? Like, you don't want to turn your kids into those little 8-year-old street preachers or anything, talking about redeem your sins or go to hell and burn. You know, you don't want to try to be like
no,
that.
No, I want to show up. I want to show up for the mat. I think... Oh, I wish I was. It's one of those family things I have to attend. There's a graveside service. But it would be, it would be fun. Everybody go dressed as a member of the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. Wouldn't that just be delicious?
It would be. It'd be.
And you know what?
It'd be iconic. It would be iconic.
Agnes would look fabulous. And the little blue, the Alice thing with the white apron, pinafore, whatever, over it. It would be Agnes, Alice. It's not that big a leap, at least, spelling-wise.
I mean, heck, we're already down the rabbit hole. Might as well, you know, enjoy the ride down.
I'm casting my family now. I'm trying to figure out who would need... Margie would be the rabbit. Ferg would be really good as the March Hare. You know, Matt as a March Hare. He does crazy real good. Doodle could be the Dormouse. You know, because she's our She's got the best grades in the house, and he was very scholarly and, you know, with a little pince-nez quizzer on his nose. Oh, God, it would be so fun to pull that together. Sorry,
yeah, but, yeah.
You took me somewhere, but you know. And the top hat with 6 7/8 in the band.
Yeah, all you need is a little outfit, a little rouge on your cheeks, and get a little get a little watch, and you'll be good to go.
Then just get into Lewis Carroll, memorize some of the dialogue.
Yeah, and then satirize it for what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah,
beautiful. Yeah, modernize it.
So it's jiu-jitsu, is it?
It's jiu-jitsu, absolutely. Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I mean, mixed martial arts is the new boxing. So, and it's like, I remember when I was in Southeast Asia and I got introduced to sumo wrestling, and they told me the actual philosophy behind it. You know, it's like this symbolic thing of, you know, two giant, you know, beings, you know, coming into contact. It's got old myth and all this other old stuff in it, and all this Shinto and Tao crap and all this other stuff. And I found it very interesting. Like when a sumo wrestler, for example, they put his hand in red ink and he puts his hand on a piece of paper and that's his autograph. Because he's just a person. And, you know, when I talk about, you know, we're talking about these fighting things, I think that's probably why fighting is one of the status symbols as it is. Like when you look in the Pax Hyenas, right? It's a matriarchal society, and they're constantly just chewing at each other's heels to get that next step in rank and prestige and upper caste, and just kind of like people. And I see a lot of similarities between that. And one of the things that we definitely have to do is jiu-jitsu. We have to sit there and we have to use a key. You know, these martial arts, these things, like. And I know I'm going to get a little creepy here, but I don't care. You know, the Hopi prophecy had a really interesting, they have these old Hopi prophecies, whatever they are, I don't know what they are, but there's a really interesting, you know, human outlook on it, that they apparently had known that we were all one at one time, and then the creator, whomever, separated us into four groups and gave us all particular powers. He gave the white people the power of fire. He gave the black people the power of water. He gave, now think about that, fire. Well, you obviously know what white people do with fire. We're lighting our houses, we're doing this, we're blowing up the world. We're doing the things that we do with it. Now, black people, not for nothing, they have power of water. Well, what's the human body made up out of? It's mostly made up of water. Where were they brought and drugged and sent through a crucible of genetic purification, whatever you want to call the slavery crap? They were sent there, and now we're... Now, I know it's racist, but excellent athletes, excellent, 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 okay? They have the power of the body. Now, what did the yellow people get? The yellow people got the power of the spirit. Right? And, you know, not for nothing, if you want to talk, whatever you want to talk about religion, but, I think they did all right with that whole Buddhist thing, and not for nothing, I think it's a sustainable type of mindset for, I don't see them invading many countries and destroying worlds and doing things like that, and that's another thing. And then the red people got the land. And I don't think in the history of mankind has any one native peoples been as successful as the Native Americans that lived in these continents, North and South America. I don't think that they have ever been as one. How many people were committed genocide against? They estimate.
Oh, there were more people on the North American continent than there were on the European continent as of 1491. Yeah. Nothing a little smallpox can't fix, but.
True. Yeah. Brought to you by the people of fire. Now, I kind of look at that and say, well, if that's old knowledge, maybe there's a place for that. Maybe that does put some sort of semblance of ancient wisdom together in this little neat little package, and that's good. Because I think that understanding our strengths and our weaknesses are things that are very important. Now, back to the jiu-jitsu. Where did that come from? That came from the people of spirit, right? And they're doing these things symbolically to represent a larger, metaphysical zone, so to speak. You know, the sumo wrestling, the jiu-jitsu, the actual art of being able to control this body, to use your nervous system, to use it in a way to defeat your opponent without causing him any damage. To be able to fight a sword-wielding ninja with just your hands. And that's Aikido. Okay, and they use, that's, you know, with, you know, Mr. Action Movie Steven Seagal, tough guy, you know, what he, made famous. But in a sense, that's why
I will break your, I will break your neck with a glance from my eye. Oh! Yeah. Oh, I know.
But you see, what he's doing is he's using that person's force against themselves. And that's all I'm trying to say when we say jujitsu, is that we need to, on the larger level, we need to use their force against them. And we need to allow them to stumble on their own. We can't sit there. If we stand in front of these wild swings, we're going to get clocked. Okay? And anybody, if you ever watch a fight, anybody can get clocked. And anybody can get caught. And then when they get caught, boom, they're doomed. But if you,
and when they, you know, when they start throwing the haymakers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let them knock themselves on there. And that's the question, you know, how to do it. You know, frankly, I found it heartening. I found this column by Charles Blow in the New York Times quite heartening, Albert, because that means that, you know, serious professional journalists have noticed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about old-fashioned go-get-the-jacket crazy here.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Glenn Beck out there talking about FEMA camps. And the problem is, and this is what, I mean, I just want to shake him. I want to smack him.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Not violently, but, you know, kind of, you know, snap out of it. And where the hell were you for the last 8 years when they were building the damn things? Because, yeah, you know, some of these FEMA camps really do exist.
Yeah, they do. But, you know, at the same time,
old train stations in Indiana, that kind of stuff with the barbed wire facing inward. I mean, I remember the video.
Yeah, hey, it's there. I mean, not for nothing, it's there. But, you know, here's the thing. Nuclear weapons are there. Or nuclear weapons, sorry. It's one of those words.
But you know, but the thing, they were there 4 years ago, and these terrified teabagging right-wingers were perfectly okay with them because, well, you know, those have to be there for the Mexicans.
Yeah. Well, see, and this is, but basically, you know, I just kind of want, what I'm kind of getting at with these freaks, you know, is just because we have them doesn't mean we have to use them. Just because they have their weapons doesn't mean that they have to use them. You know, if you got a screwdriver, you can screw in screws, and if you got a hammer, you can pound nails, and if you have a gun, you can kill things.
Right, and let's be clear. Let's be clear about the purchase of a handgun. And I will use myself as an example. It is impossible to purchase a handgun with, and I'm not talking about long, you know, game rifles or shotguns or slingshots or anything. It is impossible, Albert, to purchase a handgun without contemplating using it on another human being.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they're for.
Yeah, but those are easy to, you know, subjectify with, they're wearing a ski mask and they're just like a video game kind of thing. They're targets.
I bought the darn thing back when I had a need for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought it having been trained and taught and everything that goes with it, how to use it, how to strip it, how to clean it, how to be careful with it, how not to shoot myself with it. How to deal with, you know, what do you do in a confrontation situation? Everything was with the idea that I might have to someday use it on another human being.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I did it from a sort of a clinical standpoint, but there's a hell of a lot of these right-wingers that do it from an oh boy, yippee-ki-yay standpoint.
True.
They want to. They, if they go to their grave and they never get to, they think they missed out on something. I mean, that crazy, no. See, that's unfair to call him a crazy bastard in Pittsburgh. That evil bastard in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
He ambushed those cops.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, it's axiomatic that a cop hates more. I mean, I've been told this by cops, so I'm taking it for gospel. Cops hate being called out on a domestic violence more than any hostage situation, bank robbery, guy shooting gun in street. Fine. You know what you're dealing with. But when you go to that closed door on a domestic violence and you knock on the door, you have no flippin' idea what's on the other side.
Yep. Oh, and that's something I can echo because my cousins were cops in the city, New York.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, because we've got this federalized thing whereby once you are charged with a domestic violence, you lose your Second Amendment rights. When Mama picked up the phone and called, young Mr. Poplawski knew, and I mean, I'm not making up, I'm not defending him by any stretch, but he probably knew, because remember, this guy was also a failed right-wing talk host, Albert. I don't know if you knew this or not.
No, I didn't know that.
He was a failed right-wing gas bag.
Mm.
He was a Glenn Beck, Hannity, Savage wannabe. And he hadn't, you know, he hadn't succeeded, but he'd heard everything, and he knew. He knew that because his mama had just called a domestic on him, that he really was gonna lose his gun rights. And that is part and parcel. You can't blame the law for it. The guy was an evil bastard.
Seriously.
Up to his eyeballs in sick, mean, and evil.
And if they were that tough, you think that they would maybe, take Chuck Norris up on one of his little schools or something? You know, I mean, not for nothing. There's guns and there's other ways to defend yourself. I mean, if that's what you're going to use is your right to defend yourself, you know, I mean, if you want to change the system, go out and go try to change it. You know, go within. Go do something. Use your mind. You know, I think that's my keyword there, is these people need to use their minds a little more. And, you know, you sit there, and a guy like him is evil. You know, you're going to sit there and ambush some police just because you're going to lose your right because you can't behave. Hey, you know, hey, Ma, the dog peed on your floor. I'm sorry, I'll clean it up.
Yeah, but do you know, this guy was also a...
He's not only a failed talk right-wing freak, he couldn't even train a dog to potty train. What the heck's wrong with that person? Think about that. What? You can't even train
And you know, he's a Stormfront visitor.
Yeah. Ooh, I'm shocked.
Contemplating getting Aryan runes tattooed on the outside of his calves.
He's going to need those in prison.
He was. He got.
He's still alive? I don't even know. Did he die? What happened?
No, he didn't die.
Oh, good. Good.
He got bounced out of Marine Corps boot camp because he missed his girlfriend.
And he threw a tray or something.
Threw a tray at a drill sergeant. This is a real hero here.
Yeah, he's a real American hero. I mean, you know, not for nothing, man.
But on those weirdo right-wing web pages, Pam Spaulding over at Pam's House Blend covered this quite nicely. Originally, when the story broke, what were all the wingnuts? It's probably a Jew. It's Jew.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Or a black man. You know how. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the news comes out it's one of theirs.
Yeah.
Cricket symphony again.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, yeah, because look at the pattern lately. Come on. Look at these guys. You got the one guy whose wife had to shoot him, but he was making freaking bombs and everything else. And, you know, come on. I mean, you know, that's just the reality of it, and that's why our jiu-jitsu has to be impeccable. We do need to be careful, because we don't need them taking shots at Barack Obama, even though I'm telling you, and forgive me for saying this, even though if they did do something like that, they would be, I don't even know if they'd have 21% anymore. You know, yeah, there are a bunch of bloodthirsties out there. There ain't no doubt about it. Okay, we all know this. We see them on a daily basis. However, I could see something like that completely, that they would just be gone forever. That would render them to the ashes of history. They become, just the mindset like that would become equivalent to Nazism. You know, oh, what are you going to say? It's exactly right. That's exactly what would happen to them. You know, I think these days, just the collective days of human beings, you know, trying to kill each other and wasting all this energy trying to do that, like, those things got to stop, man. You know, those things got to stop. And, you know, and obviously they're not the ones to do it. We are. It's our responsibility. You know, it's our responsibility. Yeah, some of us are going to get hit. Some of us are going to get hurt. Some people are innocent, are going to suffer, and so forth. And that paints. It might be me. I never know. Who knows? Who knows? How do you know? I don't know the guy, my neighbor across the street. How do I know he's not a freaking, you know, Aryan Nation Stormfront, you know, wants to go be a prison bitch or whatever. I don't know what this guy is doing. How do I know? I might have to face this one day. You may have to. You look at where you live. You know, you may have to face this one day. You know, so these are things that, you know, we all, you know, may have to face, but we're all going to have to sit here and keep our cool about it. You know, we have to keep our cool about it. You know, certainly, I think, you know.
You fight them with facts, Albert. Nobody's after your guns.
Exactly. Reality.
You know, gotta kind of use some facts. Hello, the NRA is anybody, everybody lying to you.
Yes. Absolutely.
But the NRA wouldn't lie to me. They take my dues every year. I got the canceled checks. They wouldn't lie to me.
Yeah, it's funny. They're in the NRA, but they hate unions. I mean, it's just, yeah, they're idiots. They're stupid.
Yeah, because if I tried to live in that world, my head, one of those, one morning I'd just get up, my little pumpkin head would just go, yeah, and it's over. Albert, this has been a wonderful one. We will talk soon, brother.
Absolutely, brother. You take care, and I look forward to the rest.
All right, later.
Give my love to everybody. Bye-bye.
Sure thing. Bye. The sage of Southwest Wisconsin. That's Brother Albert. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm fine, Reverbo. How about you?
Well, I want one of them space beams. I want one of Newt's laser beams. Did he not reveal the existence of some kind of a space beam?
I think he did.
Now,
but it's Newt, so maybe he just got one in his Wheaties. We don't know.
But, I mean, again, I hate to just keep bringing up the same scene and the same character, but it's just, there he is. There's General Turgidson. He's got his sleeves rolled up, and he's just chewing.
No, I'm not saying we're not going to get our hair mussed.
Well, remember, he's chewing that gum, and he's listening to Dr. Strangelove, and he's chewing that gum, chomping on that gum, and his eyes are just getting bigger and bigger. And he's, you know, while he's listening to this, he's going on, yes, if we just, you know, bury bombs and fuse them all together, you know, we'll have a virtual doomsday scenario. And then he goes,
animals can be bred or slaughtered?
Oh, God, he taps the general he's next to on his shoulder, and he goes, damn, I wish we had one of those doomsday machines. And that's what I'm thinking now. I want one of Newt's space weapons. And I remember the New York Times and a bunch of, there were some media outlets all over the past 8 years, I think, sort of got into a little trouble. They claimed they were revealing these secrets and stuff like that. And I think Newt just revealed one to us.
He may have. But the thing is, if there's a space-based laser weapon, why not wait until you see what they're doing and then shoot it down in the sky and really put the fear of God in them? You know, it's not that hard to hit a non-moving target, Reverbo.
Well,
but you know, if you wait till the little suckers fall, and I don't know, you know, it's saying stage one fell into the Sea of Japan, stage two, you know, fell God knows where, somewhere in the Pacific. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe it was Newt's laser weapon. Or maybe Obama shot it down with one of those guns he's taken away. See, I'm not helping again.
You're not helping again. But all of these scenarios are possible. Remember, the president has his finger on the button of those of Newt's space laser beam as well. So he can use that anytime he wants. So, coming to a town near you, the angry American with a gun. He is full of right-wing hate. He is armed, and he is incredibly stupid.
And he's been activated and radicalized by right-wing talk.
He has been activated, and the problem is that just being stupid does not defuse the deadly threat.
No, it makes the deadly threat worse.
I'm telling you, these people.
I mean, Albert's characterization of this homicidal
this homicidal geek. No.
Well, which one?
Homicidal pinhead in Pittsburgh.
Oh, that one.
His characterization of him is not off the mark. You know, 23 years old, lives at home with mom in a nice neighborhood in Pittsburgh that is, oddly enough, you know, racially and ethnically diverse. Could never afford to live there on his own. Failed at the Marines. Failed at being a talk show host. Can you, you know, Kostak a while back gave us the rundown that you get with Tammy Bruce. Gun-toting, death-penalty-supporting, Bush voting, genuine feminist. Can you imagine what the intro would be for this Poplawski guy? He's a failed Marine who threw his dinner, his chow tray at a drill sergeant. America, wake up. It's...
Oh, God. Just the idea of being a failed right-wing talk show host is almost impossible to believe. How can you fail doing math?
Oh, you know, at this point in time, Newt Gingrich is a clip from Austin Powers.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is a clip from a Paul Simon song. Over the mountain, down in the valley, lives the former talk show host. And now far and wide, his name is known. Damn.
Well, I'm going to conflate them with... Christian fundamentalism, because it's just so easy to do. And all I got to say is that these people better believe in a reward after death, in a Christian afterlife, because here they are, they're doing the dirty work, the right wing's dirty work, and when it's all done, they think they're going to get invited to the big party. And I guess I'm going to be the one to have to tell them, no, actually, you're not. You know all those coal mines that everybody, we just worked so hard to keep, you know, those dirty coal mines? That's where you're going. You're going head first down into the mine shaft. You know, can you say Joseph Stalin?
Yeah. Ever seen that?
In my opinion, that's where they're headed.
Ever seen that, you know, first,
hey,
Lord of the Rings movie, The Balrog?
Class in the New World Order? We did what you told us to do. Not exactly.
Yep, you get to dance with the Balrog.
That's my feeling on this. I mean, you remember what happened. You remember they didn't even, in the last election, they didn't get I guess this isn't an oxymoron. Is there such a thing as the moderate knuckle dragger, the moderate idiot? Because...
you mean the one who's only consumed a little bit of melamine?
They had like a mole or somebody who worked in the face. Faced office, and the Bush administration kind of found out that they were all laughing at him behind their back. Remember that?
Yep. I remember
they
that.
They weren't taking him seriously. And they realized they were all being taken for a ride, and so they didn't really...
Yeah, dang, they're using us again.
Maverick this time around.
And it's not unfair, Reverbo, to bring this up in relation to right-wing fundamentalist phony Christianity, because... A lot of this is flowing out of there.
You lost me, didn't you?
No.
I can't hear you anymore.
Oh, no.
I'll try calling you back.
Okay. I didn't lose Reverbo, our critic at large. But these things happen in the magic, because telephony is still magic to me. I don't understand how it works. But all this stuff, remember, Obama is a secret Muslim. He's going to take the oath of office on the Quran. Where did that come from? That came from the pulpit. That came from right-wing fundamentalist phony Christianity. Right? Right. The Obama carbon tax, $3,100 a year, where's it coming from? It's coming from the pulpits and the Southern Baptist Church. I already mentioned this. Obama's going to get your guns? I'll give you dollars to donuts. It's coming from the same place. When we talk about the fringes of the right wing, man, the fringes of the right wing are nothing if they are not the fringe, the tasseled fringes on the choir robes of the Southern Baptist Convention. Is that you, Reverbo?
Yeah, it was Newt Space Beam. I was targeted momentarily by that laser beam.
Oh God, you've got to encase your telephone in aluminum foil. Don't you know these things? Do I have to tell everybody everything?
You know, actually, it sort of makes you feel all wiggly when it comes through the roof and.
Oh God, have they hybridized it with Woody Allen's Orgasmatron from Sleeper?
Pretty much, yeah. Where were we? You know, to use Albert's metaphor for the, you know, using the stronger man's power against him. I guess that's the point of martial arts and this kind of thing. That may be, you can possibly do that with some enemies, but man, how do you do that with the just majestically stupid enemy, with the enemy who is beyond? I mean, your close cousin is the guy across the ocean who's strapping. She's strapping dynamite around her belly and walking into the police station in Iraq.
I mean, and you, did you just say a mouthful, Reverbo? You know, I've got this story in the stack. In Iraq, you know, that shining beacon of emerging democracy between the rivers. They've decided it's time to go after the Homer sectionals. In two separate incidents, six gay men have been found shot dead in the last 10 days in a Shia-controlled part of Baghdad.
Man, they don't mess around with it.
And, I mean, it's not like one behind the ear. They are bullet-riddled bodies. And they've been found with pieces of paper attached to them, on which was written the word in Arabic, whatever it is, pervert. They found other bodies with the word puppies written on their chests. That's a derogatory euphemism used by folks in Sadr City when they want to talk about gay people.
Yeah, probably buried right next to, in the same hole as their wives who didn't really feel like having sex with them, you know, anytime they asked.
Yeah, no kidding.
These are close cousins. Because I don't know how you, like approach them.
You know, bombs going off all over Baghdad today. If I read correctly.
Yeah, it was a nasty day over there.
I can't imagine that there are very many good ones. I mean, I guess a good day in Baghdad these days is when a few bombs go off. You know, what?
We are going to need. We're going to need the men and women of the New World Order in those coal mines, Bob, and you know it, and I know it. So that's where, you know, you want to put people back to work. I think that's where you're going to go.
These are.
Oh man, you need to go take some vitamins now.
Oh man, that.
Oh God.
But no, I got your note over the weekend, and you said so many profound things that it's hard to hit on them all, Reverbo. But
by the way, I have to get. Can you just download that? What is it called? Open Office? Because I couldn't.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. It's yeah, free. OpenOffice.org.
Okay.
Yeah, don't sweat it. You know, I like the fact that, you know, you say that Obama is very well likely the savviest politician to come down the block in a long time. And, you know, he did, you know, got the budget passed, got the stimulus passed. And but even that gets the little right wing monkey bats hopping and squealing. Because he bested them again. See, that's the thing. He keeps, you know, to go back to that jujitsu metaphor, Reverbo, he's doing it to them. He is using their force against them. They hop, they scream, they swear they're going to go nuclear. John Cornyn says he's gunning for somebody. And the next thing you know, that whooshing sound flying past them is another piece of legislation they couldn't stop.
And in a way, you know, it's so easy. We're still just. I mean, and I can't stand it. They still get all this press. They still get the megaphone to just scream as loud as they want, but it's not mattering. it's still annoying, but...
A lot of America is getting to the point where it is... And this is, you know, this is the dangerous part. A lot of America, as evidenced, like I said, by this Charles Blow column in the New York Times, is beginning to laugh at these goons. Which makes it, wait, don't laugh at me. See, I'm deadly.
Well, yeah, the cornered rat.
I mean, Lord God, right before I went on the air, Reverbo, what do I find? I see a post. There's a gun show going on down in Kentucky Way.
Mm-hmm.
And that gun show has sold out of all three cases by 3 p.m. Saturday.
Not of the antique blunderbuss, probably.
No, these are T-shirts.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it there.
No, sadly, it's not. It's T-shirts. Sort of silhouette of Barack Obama with the mouth open, talking, with his thumb up in the air, making a point, only his thumb's pointing over his shoulder at a sort of hovering profile of Adolf Hitler. And the T-shirt simply says, Hitler gave great speeches, too.
What, I mean, are these like, what brainiacs from the future have come back to us to deliver these just gems? I'm just stunned.
Yeah, this was, by the way, not just at any old gun show, Reverbo. This was at the Knob Creek Machine Gun Shoot.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, they had one of those machine gun shoots not too long back, and I remember covering it on the show. Where the recoil action, the parents were letting their like 7-year-old shoot. Hey, let's let Junior shoot the machine gun. And the recoil knocked it back, and he either shot himself or his mother or his father or his baby brother or something.
Oh God! I mean, I'm remembering that horrible deal where that little kid got shot and killed with his father's gun or something.
Yeah.
What was that, last year? Jesus.
By the way, the Washington Post, you know, the Washington Post, Reverbo, is still running ads, has been running ads for the Nation's Gun Show in Chantilly, Virginia. And the ad says, get your guns while you still can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, that ship hasn't sailed. You know, this is just so... I don't know. I don't know anymore. I just don't know. Let me tell you, they're not going to ever take your guns away. Well, let's not say ever, never, never. Maybe.
Well, you know, if you get yourself involved in a domestic violence, we're going to come take your guns. Because that's the law of this country.
Yeah. A felon is probably not going to be buying a 9mm anytime soon. Legally, that is.
Oh, he'll he may be able to get away with it, but you know, if he gets caught with it, look, you're a felon. Yeah, goodbye. Because
yeah,
it's the law. It is a law which we are all deemed to have consented to because it was passed by our elected representatives and signed into law by our elected president. You know, you and I may disagree with it, but we are deemed to have consented to the Patriot Act. Because of the structure by which the Patriot Act came into existence. You know, we are deemed to have consented to Medicare Part D, even though when the right-wing controlled Congress, they ramrodded that thing through in the dirtiest, most skullduggerous, new word, skullduggerous, way possible. But it went through the way it was supposed to go through, and we are deemed to have consented to it. Now, we have the right to turn around and fix it, where both of those are concerned, I hope we do. But
not like being deemed to consent to, like, driving a big Dodge Caravan. No, that's different, I guess.
No, but okay, what? Well, okay, there is an even there's an even clearer case though, since you mentioned an automobile, Reverbo. If you are toddling down the road and driving like Willie Weaver and can't quite decide which side of the yellow line you want to drive on, and the policeman pulls you over, you are deemed to have already consented by virtue of accepting your driver's license to go down to the station with him and blow into the little machine.
That's true. Prior consent, whatever that's called.
Informed consent.
Informed consent, yeah.
So, you know, ugh. But yeah. Meanwhile, you know, so, you know, I'm looking at a story about a gun show in Kanab Creek, Kentucky, and a gun show in Chantilly, Virginia. That ain't the only two of these going on. And I'll bet you if I went and found, and I'll bet you, A, I can just look in the local trader's guide and find me a gun show somewhere in West Virginia. B, drive to same. C, walk through the door and watch T-shirts like this fly off the shelves.
You can watch T-shirts like that being draped over, probably over mannequins, and have them being riddled at the gun show's super-duper firing range. No doubt.
Wouldn't surprise me in the least.
It's funny that classically there's been a lot of bloodshed from the left, right? A lot of revolution, a lot of big shit went down thanks to the left. But this kind of stuff now, this is Dick Cheney death squad stuff. This is just flat out murder.
Well, from the same people who brought you.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys who were saying, you know, oh, yeah, we got to kill the bad guys even if it's illegal, we got to do it anyway. For the last 8 years, are the same ones that are out there. You know, you got Glenn Beck weeping on the air and calling, imagine the unimaginable. What? You know, I imagine the unimaginable. I imagine flying cars.
Oh.
And all that Donald Fagan, you know, what a beautiful world it will be. What a glorious time. That's what.
Can I say helium-filled pants on the air?
You can say helium-filled pants.
That's what I imagine. I've had my order in for those since 1965.
I want helium-filled pants.
Everybody does. Who doesn't want those? But we're not going to get. We're going down the mineshaft. You and I and wow. Now you and I will be gone. The people who are heading down the mineshaft are the people who think that they're going to have a place at the table. Surprise!
Yeah, no table.
By the way,
no table, no place. No place, no table.
No, you caused a lot of bloodshed, and thanks for all your help, and now you can all go down into the shaft. Hey, by the way, do you have to be Catholic to go to get accepted at Notre Dame?
No.
Oh, have you heard what happened with the latest thing at Notre Dame is?
You mean the hissy fit over Obama speaking?
Yeah, it's actually only a couple of hundred of people having a fit, but it's getting some attention, yeah.
Well, there's some bishop or various other, you know, child sexual abuser I certainly won't attend. He doesn't love life. Yeah, wait a minute, Reverbo. You open another door. We got to square this one up. The right wing doesn't want Obama to speak at Notre Dame because he doesn't reverence life. Meanwhile, the right wing is shooting up Pittsburgh police officers. Ouch. Don't want to live in that brain.
I can't. I mean, many times I have held opposite thoughts concurrently, but, you know, enough's enough. I can only go so far with these things. Yeah, they're a real life, a life-sustaining, a life-revering force, those Christians.
Oh, yeah. Hey, anybody who wants to keep condoms out of Africa, gotta love those guys. I mean, they're on that life-affirming, they're on the life-affirming ball. I mean, laser beam focus. Oh, there we are with the lasers again.
Yeah, the laser beams. You're not feeling suddenly wiggly, are you? That's when it's...
It tingles.
Yeah, but you're in the lead-lined bunker, the head-on studios there. They can't find you.
I don't know. There may be cracks in the lead, Reverbo. I mean, you know, we operate on shoestring. It's pretty cheap lead. It's come on. Might as well tell. It's pencil lead, okay? It's not even real lead. It's sea bass.
Sorry, man. You don't have a prayer.
Nope, I'm tingling. I'm tingling all over.
I was so excited over the weekend. I was so trying to convince myself that Obama is just keeping these people at bay and throwing them bones and everything's going to be fine and he knows why he was elected and he's going to take us, lead us out of the wilderness. And then I think today I've just decided I'm just all full of shit and I don't like it. I don't trust it at all.
No,
all
but
you got to do is listen to Kevin Phillips on the radio talking about his book Bad Money, and you just suddenly your bubble is burst. Your balloon loses all its air. Because what Kevin Phillips says, and he knows more about this than I do, he says the trouble is that they just switch jackets so easily. And the Democrats are just as much the benefactors and the beneficiaries of this crap, of this easy money, of this status quo world, as the Republicans ever were.
Well, look, I mean, I go back to a much simpler dichotomy. There are them, as the saying goes, there's them that works and them that don't. We work, they don't. You know, I wish I could, you know, I'd love to be that bridge builder who's able to sit down and talk to one of these right wingers. Yeah, put the gun down. Let's talk. You and I have something in common. We work. You have nothing in common with Newt Gingrich. You have nothing in common with Wayne LaPierre. You have nothing in common with Glenn Beck or John Cornyn or any of these other goons. You work. They don't.
Except that the men who are in charge of J.P. Morgan Chase have suddenly found themselves with a whole lot in common with the Obama economic team.
Because that's where they came from.
Yeah, and suddenly they're, hey, we're Democrats over here. Yeah, you just told the Republicans, we're Democrats.
You know, look, who is it? Not Guyton. Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, certified official, financial smart guy. You know, it just came out that he earned a few million dollars last year on the speaking tour, but it's not like he's lobbying because he didn't really work for them. He was just an independent contractor who was going to tell them important economic news about what they needed to know, so it's okay to write the big check. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and goon on the Obama administration. What I think Barack Obama is finding out is that it is a hell of a lot harder to put together a team of certified smart people who can get the job done, who don't already have baggage, because and you know, I don't even blame the people with the baggage, Reverbo. The system itself, the people higher up inside the system, the gamesmen, make sure that everybody is corrupted, make sure that everybody is compromised. And everybody is. And that's where that frustration comes from, at least for me.
Am I the only guy left in the United States who, like, paid his taxes every year and just, you know, went to work and shut up? And I mean, it makes you feel like a fool, in a way. I mean, it's like the game is to be corrupt. The game is to you get ahead if you pull a fast one. Who's going on about our culture and how you look at the TV shows, you look at these adventure reality shows, and then the person who wins is the person who stabs everyone in the back.
Yeah, right. And that is presented as that didn't develop on its own. Survivor came from Great Britain to the United States.
Okay,
it was tried over there first, but the Survivor model and the rest of the wannabes and the follow after so-called reality television shows all operate on an essentially purely capitalist anarcho-randian model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the little motto that around the Survivor logo. What is it, like lie, cheat, steal, survive, something like that? Outlast, outlie, whatever. These are all based on capitalist models. And as a consequence of that, in turn, well, you know, it's only entertainment. They're not talking that boring economics talk. they're just inculcating an entire population with the idea that that is acceptable behavior.
You know where this conversation, there's only one more place this conversation can go, and that is admitting, and I don't know if I want to do this, I love capitalism, I just haven't been able to play. They haven't let me play. They taxed me to death. They, like you say, I evidently consented to all this stuff that I can't stand. Somehow or other, I guess I voted for this. But we are left with the idea that the system, that good people are corrupted by the system. Well, now this is huge. This is what Karl Marx is talking about. I mean, I don't want to go there. I don't think communism is biologically feasible. I think people have dreams and aspirations, and I think if you want to open up a hardware store, I just can't. That's where this is going.
I don't think any purely academic system of anything is feasible when you add the human joker into the deck, Reverbo. Because that's what we are. We're jokers. We are anything in any hand. It used to be. I used to have a buddy who worked in state government, and he said. I keep each side's political posters under my desk and put them up as necessary. You know, one day I'm a Republican, the next day I'm a Democrat.
No, well, back to the Kevin Phillips thing.
Yeah,
but I mean, here are fresh-faced, intelligent people who want to serve, who want to do something.
Yeah, if you ever want that to happen, the linchpin of that whole thing, Reverbo, is what is referred to for shorthand purposes as clean elections. That's the only way it happens, to absolutely get all of the lobby money out of the process. I mean, I found it so laughable on the lobbying trip. There we go. On the lobbying trip a couple of weeks ago, we were talking to a representative, you know, because the real guy wouldn't meet with us, Jay Rockefeller. We were talking to one of his staffers. And we were talking about what's going on over here, the fact that they're blowing up the mountain on the state quarter. And somebody has one. He flips it to its obverse side, puts his little index finger on it, and flips it so it goes sliding down toward the Senate staffer. And before it's halfway across the table, the guy's got his hands up like there's something poisonous coming at him. I can't accept that! It's a quarter. Water. On the other hand, if that had been a big bag of real money, you know, folding up, walking around money, and it was given in a bar and not a conference room, and it was done for purposes of a political action committee, what do you mean? That's all you got? It's going to take more than this.
But we will come up with a figure that it will take. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I'll get back to you.
Arlen Specter, today it was revealed, there was a figure that he would take, too. Did you hear about that?
No.
From a law firm that specializes in union-busting activities. A couple of 100,000 smackers. Yeah, I don't understand. You know, here you are, you're just, I want to serve. And you get a job at Lehman Brothers, or you get a job in the government, and in a few short years, you are just a monster. Is that how it works?
I've been that monster.
It's fun for a while, right?
Well, no, everybody else, you know, if you go into an office, I mean, I don't mean I've worked for Lehman Brothers.
God.
But if you go into an office, and everybody is singing Aida, and you start singing Madam Butterfly, you don't fit. And if you want to be able to just, I got to work my 8 hours, I go home, and then I can be me. And if you want to live in, if you want to be able to tolerate that compartmentalized world that that corporate America and large-scale organizational America demands of you, you'll be that guy too. And you will not come out with under most circumstances with your ethics intact. I'm still questioning myself over some of the things I've done, Robert.
Well, I think that's good to question yourself.
And it's frankly, it's why I'm doing this for nothing, as compared to getting my $7 an hour. Welcome to Walmart. Welcome to Walmart. Welcome to Walmart.
So that was you. God, you were surly that day. So what do you think? Do you think should we hope for this? Should we hope that in the short term? The fact that we have a bad situation, and the fastest way to fix this is the conventional way. Timmy and Larry and Ben, you guys know how to do this. Get it done quick, and then when the crisis is over, things are a little stable, then we're going to take a big, hard look at it. So do you think
and some variation of that is the theory that, under which we're operating right now, isn't it?
Well, that's it. I mean, evidently it is. When I was writing all that drivel over the weekend, I have to get a life. Oh, well, that's kind of fun to just spend time doing that.
That wasn't drivel. That was that was thinking on paper, on electrons. No paper involved.
Yeah, I suppose it was. Well, you're good. You flatter me. I'll accept the flattery. But I don't know. Every sentence you write, if you're not careful, then the very next sentence could be, on the other hand.
Oh, I know. I spent all day yesterday writing something, and it's still subject to editing. It started out, as crazy as it may seem, it started out Iliad, and even at, 3,500 words, it's down at haiku.
Okay.
But I understand that completely.
You're just hoping. I mean, if everyone thinks that we need to, totally come up with a new, as people have used, throwing the word paradigms around, or if everyone thinks we need to really redo this, we need to set this thing up so that it is balanced and it works for everybody and it doesn't remind us so much of Las Vegas. If everybody thinks that except the people in charge, it ain't going to happen. So we'll see.
Yeah.
It's great talking about them. It is. Obama really is. He is a flat-out star. That guy could win an election in any country in Europe.
I mean, yeah, and the other side of it, not the other side of the coin, really, but the coin next to the idea. I'm so damn proud of Michelle Obama, I could just bust.
Oh, yeah.
Because she ain't playing the game. I mean, she's and they try to caddy it up real good. Oh, well, Carla Bruni, the Mrs. Sarkozy, didn't come to Britain because she was jealous of Michelle Obama. God, I remember when they tried this meme between Raisa Gorbachev and Nancy. And Michelle's not playing.
No, following Michelle is like following the Beatles, or following, you don't want to do it. You can tell when they're just faking. These people are not, the whole world wishes they had.
She goes to this, school in somewhere in the UK and starts talking from her heart to young women, girls, and her voice begins to crack. And I'm thinking we're dealing with a real person here. This is not she has not had voice lessons in how to make your voice crack in front of adolescent girls facing the same problems you did. And I'm just proud of her.
Yeah, I am too.
The phony hissy fits. Oh my God, she changed her clothes on the plane. She can do that. Wow. Amazing. just amazing to watch the. I don't know what the for-profit media expect of her, but it seems like she is defying expectations at every turn with her hair in an updo reminiscent of Jackie Kennedy. Huh? What? I didn't see a pillbox hat. Did I miss that, Reverbo?
I didn't see one.
No. Well, she didn't negotiate a. What did I read? She didn't negotiate a tricky diplomatic situation as Mrs. Kennedy did, but she blah, blah, blah. And what she's just being is herself. I'm just proud of her for it. I haven't felt this. Wow, it's kind of reminiscent of something she said on the campaign trail. I haven't felt, for the first time in my life, I think I'm actually proud of a first lady.
Do you remember?
I'll take it back. I was kind of proud of Rosalind, too. A lot of class there.
Yeah, we were proud of Rosalind, weren't we? I liked those two. That didn't go, well, he was just sabotaged. That's a whole story for another time. We'll have to get William Casey up out of the dirt to talk about that, how that all worked. But anyway, I will let you go. It is fun talking about this like he's been the president for 5 years. He's only been the president for 5 months.
Five?
Five?
It'll be three on the 20th of April.
Oh, yeah, January, okay. It's not the election day. It's January, February, March. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It is fun.
It's damned fun.
All right. All right.
I will, Reverbo. You too, brother. Take care.
All right.
Bye now.
Take it easy.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Cassie.
Cassie, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I have good news to tell you. We had our school district debate.
Yes.
Today for the debate finals for everybody who made district, and I went. And when they had the extemporaneous competition, I took second place.
Atta girl.
Thank you. And the topic was about mining and extraction and the national parks and the state parks.
Oh, wow.
And so I had all kinds of information without even, because you weren't allowed to look stuff up. But I had all kinds of information just from your show and from listening to the horn and all the stuff that you do.
I don't want to get all Glenn Beck here, but I'm kind of halfway tearing up, Cassie.
It was so, well, that was really great. I did well on other companies.
I am so proud of you, yeah, and I'm sure.
It's the brain of them.
I'm proud of you. I'm just brimming with pride for you. And I've got a deeper reason. When I was the same age you are, I did extemp too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My topic was the moral majority. And
did you win?
Yeah, I did. and went on to the state competition. I personally think, and everybody who, all my teachers, you know, are you sure you want to do extemporaneous? Extemporaneous is awfully difficult. And it is, isn't it?
It is. It's really hard. I mean, I did three different competitions today, but, the extemporaneous is the hardest. But actually, calling and talking on the radio is really good preparation.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So do you get to go somewhere else from here?
Yes, the next is the regionals.
Wow. Where and when?
The regional is down near Houston. I'm not sure quite where it is. And it's in a little over a week. It's like 10 days.
Oh, my goodness. This is so – how many people were you up against?
23 others. There were 24 of
them. Yeah, you make – hey, everybody. You hear this? I'm so proud. Aren't y'all proud, too? Oh, God. Oh, this is wonderful, Cassie.
So, but I have to tell you, so besides the good news, I was figuring out my study schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a junior now, and next Friday is the end of the 6 weeks. And then, so between now and the end of the school year, I have 6 week exams in 4 subjects next week. And then after that, I have the SATs, the sort of basic tests. I'm doing the subject area test in June. I have my basic tests in May. I also have an AP exam and 3 text tests and then final exam. So I was looking at what I have to do between now and the end of the school year. And other than, like, debate, everything is just exams, exams, exams.
But you know what? You're going to be fine.
I have so many of them.
You're going to be fine. Remember that you are prepared already. That doesn't mean you don't have to study, but you do not have to panic. You can study. You're just looking at the stack and saying, you know, where do I begin?
Well, I begin with the ones that are next week.
Right.
That's that much I know, but it's I put everything together on a calendar and I looked at it and I was like,
well, just don't let the calendar grow eyes and stare you down, okay?
Okay.
You're gonna be fine, and yeah, you are so gonna kick butt on the SAT.
Yeah.
Come on, I will kick butt on the SAT.
Yes, I will kick butt on the SAT.
And you will. Go take a deep breath and walk in and just know. Just know that you're gonna, because you are. Because I know how hard you work, and we know how hard you work. And at the end of it all, when you get to go, you'll call in and you'll go, "Hey, guys, I kicked butt on the SAT, and I got killer grades on my 6 week exams, and my finals were cool, and I don't sweat the small stuff."
Sounds good. You know. I wanted to say something about what you were just talking about Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear what, not just her voice, but what she said to those girls in England?
I did, but I don't have it right at my fingertips.
It was, like, so inspirational. She is the coolest lady ever. And, like, on the one hand, I wish that she was famous for something besides being Barack's wife. But that's how she got to where she is now. But also, if you listen to what she's saying, I can't tell you how cool it is to have the First Lady of the United States say that how proud she was of getting good grades and how proud she was of working hard and how proud she was of making something of herself. Because it seems like everybody on TV and everybody in the media, they glorify stupidity and they glorify ignorance. And it's just so nice to have somebody who talks about how important it is to be smart and to work hard.
And especially among young women, Cassie.
She told them not to skip class, and but it wasn't like, she didn't tell them not to skip class. She told them why it's important to not skip class.
And there is a substantial difference between the two, I understand.
Yeah. Anyway.
Although, it's important that... math. You know, I mean, I can hear me go, no, ma'am, I sure won't. I won't skip Latin, and I won't skip drama, and I won't skip drama. I'm blowing off algebra because I already got the bad grade. But no, I understand. And it's so very important, you know, especially, like I said, especially among young women, because we don't, well, you know, there's all those studies that say that girls start falling off the curve at about fifth grade where math and science are concerned.
Yeah.
And that's unacceptable. That's wholly unacceptable.
Well, I know a lot of people that still say that the guys aren't going to like you if you're too smart in class. And I don't care.
Good.
I want to be with the kind of guys that don't like me if I'm too smart in class.
Yes.
They can go find some other girl. That's because I'm going to be me.
Yeah, and who you are.
Raise my hand.
Yeah, raise your hand, and who you are is smart. Who you are is not afraid to ask questions. And who you are is not afraid to give the right answer when you know it.
Nope.
And, you know about my kids and stuff. Yeah, we deal with the same thing. We've raised our kids in such a way that they speak, you know, our kids have vocabularies that are the equal of some of their teachers. And they are nothing like their classmates. And I'm not bragging. I'm not condemning.
It's hard. I mean, do they have honors classes, and is there a GT program or anything?
There's a gifted program that you have to get into in like sixth grade, or else you'll never get into it. Our youngest is in that.
Okay.
But even in those programs, you're still up against a lot of the same pressures.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably know some of that, especially okay. especially from a feminine perspective. You're seeing the same thing I'm seeing in the chat room, and I love this statement that our pal Frank and Angel just made. Being independent and being able to take care of yourself is satisfying, especially being a woman. Because this is a culture that frankly is still a long way from equality. You know, good things have begun to happen in the Obama administration as far as pay equity and things like that are concerned. But by the same token, we're just not there yet. And how we get there, Cassie, is people like you, young women like you, who refuse to play by those social standard rules. You know, I'm sure in that extent competition, you beat some boys.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a beautiful thing.
Well, yeah.
And you know, it is always nice. I mean. I know exactly how you felt because I opened my little slip of paper and it said moral majority. And I was like, well.
You said I could talk for 6 hours.
Yeah, you're going to have to stop me. And you open yours and you see mining and resources. Yeah. And you've been hanging out here for how long?
It was 4 years.
Yeah, you opened your mouth and it happened, didn't it?
It did. It was actually some of this what came out of my mouth. I sounded like you when you get on the land.
I take that as a high compliment, Cassie. And here's the cool thing. There's not when you go to those regionals, there's not a slip of paper that you're going to open that you're not going to be able to do the same thing with. Because you have busted your rear end. To make sure that you know about the world you live in. That's why you are committed to what you're committed to. That's why you're working as hard as you work.
Yeah.
Nobody and please understand that right now because you'll have butterflies. You are not going to open a slip of paper at that regional meet that you're not going to know anything about. I just about guarantee it. So, again, don't sweat the small stuff. Dadgummit, we are proud of you, Cassie.
Thank you.
And you have yourself a good night.
You too.
Congratulations. Bye. Oh, that just warms the cockles of my heart. Hey, welcome to the program.
We live in an illegitimate, dysfunctional, unconstitutional country, and we better get it clear right now. President Barack Obama invoked state secrets to prevent a court from reviewing the legality of the National Security Agency's warranties wiretapping program, moving late Friday to have a lawsuit that challenged the program dismissed. It is official. There is nothing else to this point. Everyone who is cheerleading or having hope for Obama, it's done. It's over. That's the last straw. He is completely 100% unconstitutional. That's it.
But they already did that. I mean, it was disturbing to me, David, when they did that, because it was a little case out in federal court in San Francisco, and they moved in and invoked state secrets.
I know, but every time this comes up, it continues to be unconstitutional, and it continues to where I see it as, okay, this country is officially a farce. The Democrats aren't going to do anything. And they don't want to look into wireless wiretapping program, then to my eyes and to pretty much everyone that's paying attention, we don't have a functioning country, and we won't continue until we actually have some hearings and investigation. And since we're not going to have that's the conclusions, right?
And see, that's the problem, David, because state secrets is the ultimate catch 22. It's the ultimate fight club. You know, the first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club. And that's, you know, the first rule of state secrets is don't talk about state secrets.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something, please bear in mind, this is not something that Barack Obama or George Bush invented. The whole state secrets thing, unless I've got my history completely bass-ackwards, came along in or after the Truman administration with the rise of the so-called national security state. And sadly, it has been ruled upon by the Supreme Court. And you and I think that it's unconstitutional. I find it odious. I find it utterly contrary to the idea of an open and democratic society. State secrets. Because among other things, we're terrible at keeping them. You know, these cases relating to warrantless wiretapping. Maybe wireless warrant tapping. I'm not sure. Maybe that too, David. The problem with that is that we're trying to keep state secrets not from people outside the country, but from our own citizens. You know, the sovereigns, the bosses. And again, it's a little bit like what Reverbo was talking about in that, I can imagine you get out of law school, you've got all this ivory tower legal education. And you think, well, by God, you know, maybe one of these days I'll be a judge and I'll get to rule on this. And I'll show them. But 99% of the people who make it to the federal bench don't do that. Because by the time they make it to the federal bench, they've been a partner in a silk stocking law firm for a while. They've contributed to the right political campaigns. You know, the bread has been held up at close focus to their face, and someone has said, hey, look, the butter is on this side. And you go, well, I'll be damned, it is. And the next thing you know, you're agreeing in a legal case that, there's probably a good reason to spy on our own citizens and find out the Aunt Fern's fudge recipe.
I think there are many other things that are coming on down the line if it's not this. Definitely the issues with Afghanistan. If he's doubling down and if he's going to continue to take that line, you can't go with that as being for an American. You just can't. And the fact that people are going for it, again, that shows me that we don't want to be a functional country. We want to be a dysfunctional country. And we're going to continue to be dysfunctional if we continue doing actions like this.
And we are in that state of dysfunction, David. That is best described by that line from Ben Franklin where he said, those who would exchange liberty for security deserve neither. Because the problem is that it's always somebody besides the people who really count, that is the citizenry, defining what national security is. Our buddy Aaron sent this along to me on Facebook. Did you see this insane POS that Jay Rockefeller is putting forward about the Internet?
Yeah, I saw that.
My senator, Jay Rockefeller, is putting forward a bill in conjunction, you know, it's bipartisan, because Olympia Snow or Susan Collins, one of the main duo, is co-sponsor on it, that will expressly give the President of the United States the right to shut down the Internet in the case of national emergency. Now, I've read as much as I can find on this damn thing, and I have yet to find a working definition of national emergency. And I'm not trying to be all tinfoil hat about it. It bugs the hell out of me, David. You know, because one man's national emergency is another man's the day at the office.
I think it's time for everyone to just consider it and actually come to a confirmation that it doesn't matter. I remember listening to what Bernie Sanders and all of these people. We talk to them and we keep talking to them. And the Democrats and the Republicans, they want an authoritarian state, and they'll have it little by little. And that's what's happening right now. There is no, see, this is the thing that I really hate about this. Just so you know, Bob, I'm on the Twitter account for Prosecute George W. Bush.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. And I'm actually just hitting up senators and giving them my piece so they can see it on their Sidekick. I don't really expect a response. It's just, that's the way I'm responding, and I'm taking action regarding that. And actually, my strategy is to put fear in a lot of these congressmen and politicians, so at least we can get this issue going in terms of, because I see it this way, the technology is going to be the wave of where we are able to change a little bit of the a direction that we're facing, but I'm not like completely in the clouds over this. Like when I talked to Bob Alexander on the phone, he said, I don't care. He goes, I don't specifically, I know pretty much that Bush is never going to be guilty, but he goes, but I'm not after that. He goes, I'm just after the indictment.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you can even go further down toward the ground on the totem pole, so to speak, David. And recognize, you know, maybe there won't be an indictment. But if you build a national consciousness that the man was a war criminal, eventually it will be recognized by virtually the whole country.
Amy Goodman won't touch this story. That's the consensus I got on that. You actually talked to her. So you know what? This is the
why not?
Disconnect. This is a disconnect, Bob. It's a disconnect bigger than we can possibly. It's like a 4-hour lecture, and the show's about to close, so I'll just leave it on this. There are liberal gatekeepers, and there are people who will go as far to call Bush a rogue, unconstitutional, pseudo war criminal. But when you actually say, okay, so when are we going to have that trial? There's silence, and then there's, oh, there are some happenings in Guatemala recently.
I hear my mother calling.
Yeah, that's the game. So what we need to do as people is realize when that happens, you can't let that be silent, and you have to be there with your conviction and your words of power. And your progressivism, and connect with what you can. Don't let that be like a rest, like in a symphony. There actually has to be a melody there. That's what we've been missing right there. That space, it can't be there anymore, and we've let that rest be there too long. That's what needs to change.
Yeah, change on a list of a bunch of other changes. I'm not trying to dilute the value or vigor of your argument, But something just crossed my desk right now that just has me pissed off in the extreme. Blanche Lincoln, a so-called Democrat from Arkansas, has announced that she will not oppose the Employee Free Choice Act.
You know, Bob, this is the thing that people don't realize. We have an equalizer, or sort of an equalizer, coming to us. Every day it's creeping with us. With a technology like Twitter, I don't think people understand, because if literally Claire McCaskill had 1,000 Twitters just flooding her cell phone, she would get the message. She would understand. We know what you're up to. We know you just care about your salary, and you've been pretty much beaten down, and you don't really have a progressive bone in your body. But guess what? All of these people here, they understand that it's adapt or you adapt or get out. It's that simple. And the problem is Bob said this too, is that to connect with the president that we have that was just in office, it's harder for people to focus and stay attention. So that's why we need this kind of pivotal moment. A movement, if you will. And that's why I moved and veered toward Twitter, because I saw what was happening with the Congress and Senate people. And I said, you know what? This is more psychological than a letter on the desk, because this is the cool thing. This is the trendy thing. I'm not saying letters and phone calls are cool, but this is the trendy thing. And I believe that if there is actual a viral moment for Congress and Senate, You can turn these people in directions that you never would imagine. And that's what I'm trying to attempt to do anyways with this prosecute G.W. Bush. I know it's going to be a long haul regarding the followers and having people sign up, but I've been signing up after news network after news network, and I just leave messages for CNN like, well, it would be nice if you guys actually cared about some actual issues that mattered in the progressive sphere, but since you're not progressive and you're corporate, I guess war crimes isn't on the radar. I leave little things like that.
And what
I'm saying is you can't take these things for granted, because the moment you take them for granted, they'll be taken away.
No, I would never suggest that. I'm proud of what you're doing, David.
Yeah.
You know, help build that groundswell those little words whispered into the ear of the universe. And it can happen. You know, we've seen good things happen. If it turns out, for instance, that John Yoo can no longer travel abroad for fear of having a bag thrown over his head and being dragged off to Spain to face a court of competent jurisdiction and have justice meted out there, good.
I think it goes to this. I'm at the point where I know not much change can happen in my lifetime, but I know this. I want the people who see this, who are lurking, to understand that, yes, you feel that way. And you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. I don't think there can be much change that comes from this. But guess what? You're going to feel better about yourself, because you're going to be saying what you want to say. And you never know what can happen regarding any of these issues. So don't you want to attempt that? Don't you want to try that? Because when you look back on your life. And
yeah, it's that Gandhi thing, David. It's be the change you want to see.
And when your kids say that too, but when your kids say, well, why didn't you do anything? Even if things turn out to be rubble, and he goes, well, damn it, I did do something. Here's what I did, and here's what we did. But the problem was, a lot of people were not connecting with this message. At least you can say that.
Yeah, well, you remind me, you and I'm sitting here looking at the chat room with that gorgeous American flag across the field, and it reminds me of that American flag that's hanging in the background at the beginning of George C. Scott's Patton. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, yes, yes.
And he delivers that monologue at the beginning, and he says, when they ask you, where were you in the big war, at least you'll say, I was with Patton. and you won't say I shoveled shit in Louisiana. Well, you know, it's the same thing, David. You're doing something. You're being part of the greater good.
That's pretty much, I mean, I think a lot of people, they have these delusional fantasies, and they continue to sell people on this. I think, to me, what I do is I just be directly honest, and I say, you know what, I don't even know what difference it's going to make, but I just want to see it happen, because you know what, I'm a trial and error human being. If it's an error, I don't care, because I can line up another trial and do another trial. I'm not going to be discouraged by keep trial, because in some ways it's kind of interesting and fascinating to see what happens.
Yeah, it is, and it's not academic. These are matters of critical, real justice. They really are. David, I'm proud of you for doing it, and I hope you get. I'll go to Facebook. I'll go to Twitter and I'll find it and I'll follow you.
It's a long climb. My goal is to get like thousands and thousands and thousands, because here's what I want to do. I want all those news networks to understand that, you know what, you weren't paying attention to this early on, and I have the messages to prove that you weren't paying attention. I pretty much know the people coming along. When I hit the 10,000th follower, or however many followers it is, it's just going to keep moving up in ranks. I just have to find a way to connect that ladder, and I'm reading up on –